Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 18 of the show. 18. That's 18 episodes. We can legally drink. Wait, in most countries that listen to us, we can legally drink. Not in America, but in America, we've been drinking since we were 13 because it's America, and that's what we do over here.
Can't even buy smokes at 18 anymore.
Yeah, you can't. That'll cut down on vaping, I think. That, I don't know. Anyway, welcome to the Atlanta Warhammer Podcast Show. I'm not David.
I'm not Zach.
And I'm not Josh.
I'm glad we've established that. But we are Atlanta Warhammer, which is the show you're listening to. Completely not affiliated in any way with Games Workshop. We just talk about their stuff a lot. And maybe they listen. Maybe they don't. We'll find out when that giant bug army hits if they actually are paying attention to us and siphoning our brain meat. Before we get into this show, I'm excited about this show. I really am. This is
gonna be a meaty episode.
Oh man, I love this kind of stuff. I mean, I love all of our shows, but this kind of show really gets me going because it's all about the story, which is the only thing I can't lose at Age of Sigmar. So it is my favorite part.
There's a will, sir. There's a way.
I would have found it by now. I may not be a great painter or a great player, but I can learn story stuff. So before we dive in, we should thank our sponsors. So we got Llama Juice Painting. If you're buying all these new sweet models to play all these new cool factions and sub-factions and whatnot, you're going to get them painted. So talk to Justin. Blueberry Podcasting, which is the people that put up with us and host the show for us. And Gigabytes Cafe in Marietta, Georgia. And a special thanks to Gigabytes because they managed to secure me a physical copy of this book, which we should say is nigh impossible in the States right now. If you're an international listener and you're like, I see five of them on the shelf, covet them, take them and distribute them to us. Cause over here we got nothing. Like, I know you guys are stuck using the digital copy for right now, just cause no one could get one. And I think that's, you know, A, Games Workshop's distribution is always a little wonky. And B, COVID. I have a feeling this was supposed to be a much larger rollout than your store gets one book and one of each of the box sets.
Yeah, certainly not, I think, intended.
No, yeah, I do. I like the people who are like, oh, they're just doing this to drive up demand. And it's like, okay, while that may be a thing that some companies do, you have to sell more than one thing to make it work. Like, you can't drive up demand if you only have three Nintendo Switches on the shelf. There's a lot of demand, but you're only going to sell three units. So you have to have the supply. This isn't a Games Workshop just wants to make it harder to get their stuff thing. They would love if this book was everywhere available for sale right now. But, you know, it's not. So we're going to work with what we got.
So because you don't have physical copies at home, we're going to bring you the soothing, sultry sounds of our voices talking about said book.
Yes, and before we go any farther, Hoo Boy spoilers. Let's just, right now.
Yeah.
If you are invested in the story in any capacity of Age of Sigmar, which is, I hesitate to say, like, it doesn't have a main narrative, really. It's kind of, and we're this week, what kind of dumb stuff is Sigmar getting up to? But this, like the, I guess Forbidden Realms kind of changed stuff. It did introduce the Ossiarch a little bit. But like the Malign Portents thing, where it introduced the Necroquake and basically rewrote the rules of the world, this book doesn't 100% change everything, but I can't imagine it going back. Like, I'm trying to be as spoiler-free right now before we get into that. I can't imagine this book, like, in another couple of books or whatever in this series, everything just going back to normal, like, whoops, well, okay.
No.
I don't think.
Yeah, I can't. This is like, you may have an awkward relationship with your roommate in college. You know, they may leave dishes out occasionally, but this is like coming home and finding out that they have just slaughtered an entire horse and left its carcass in the middle of the dining room. Like, it's going to be a little more than awkward the next day when you're talking to them. I don't think you're ever going to be able to recover from this instance.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I was just going to say, if you want the too long, didn't listen, the TLDL version of this, I don't know, skip ahead, like, I don't know, 70, 80 minutes in the future.
yeah.
Briefly touch on the Battle Foam updates and the rules, and, you know, you can skip all the story part.
Yes.
Otherwise, The main too long didn't listen portion of this is that Marathi's a dick.
Marathi is the worst. She's the worst. Yeah, we will put a time code in the show notes, and I will actually do it this time. So if you are wanting to skip all of this and just get the rules, which we're not going to talk a lot about, but it's there if you want it. Yeah, so follow that time code. It's on the show notes. Look on whatever you're listening to this on. It's there, right in front of you. So yeah, I'm glad we're all here to talk about this story about a very powerful, primarily evil woman doing everything she can to selfishly gain more power and basically screw over all of her friendly allies and former friends. So it's called Shadowlands. It's the newest expansion from World of Warcraft. And And it actually is kind of the same story, which is a weird parallel that I'm sure neither of them planned on doing, because these companies do have a relationship. I mean, one of them spawned the other one, kind of. So I thought that was kind of interesting that this whole arc of character, it's kind of the same thing. And I know, Josh, we've completely lost you on this, but...
I'm talking Warcraft, I got nothing.
Yeah, that summary applies to the newest World of Warcraft expansion pretty accurately. Which is kind of interesting. But unlike World of Warcraft, we got a lot more story up front here, and we don't have to kill and skin 14 sheep in order to activate it. So let's talk about what's going on in this book. We should probably start at the beginning, because that's where...
Yeah, let's... Well, the beginning is an excellent place to start. How about Act 1, Blood of Cain?
Yeah, they really... They heavy metaled this up as much as
they
could.
Yeah, they
really did. Yeah. So yeah, Act 1, before we get there, there's a couple pages that are pretty cool. There's like a poem, The Prophecy of Paturation? I did not get that right. It's something to do with fatherhood. It's a Slaaneshi thing. It's kind of a spoiler for the whole book, actually, because in the prophecy, it's like, hey, the Dark Priest stirs, squirms, and gives birth. And spoiler alert, it's an abomination. What kind of confetti do you use to start a forest fire when you give birth to an abomination of Slaanesh?
Cyan.
I was thinking like glitter and just fingernails.
Entrails, right? Oh, yeah. It's just glitter and entrails.
Yeah, glitter and entrails, and like, yeah. I can't think of anything.
Well, it's got to be like that. It's got to be like that super fine glitter that you'll never get out.
Right.
Oh yeah, it just gets in your lungs.
You'll be finding that glitter for decades.
You'll be coughing that glitter up in your 50s, and your kids will be like, why do you cough so much? You'll be like,
I got the glitter lung.
Got that glitter lung. Congress won't pay me for the glitter lung. Oh, man. So, yeah, there's a little poem about poem. I keep saying poem. It's a prophecy. It's not a poem, although you could probably use it as one, about Slaanesh. And then there's just a little quick overview of, like, here's where things are. Basically, super fast overview. Ready? Time me. Soul Wars happened, bunch of Night Haunt, everybody went, oh crap, ghosts. Everything got really crazy, spells came to life, orcs doing orc stuff. The Ossiarchs invaded the realm of Archeon, the Eight Points, and took over part of, well, they took over the Shaish Gate, and now they kind of live in his house too a little bit. And he's mad about that, but they haven't really seen him since then. Archeon is just kind of not there anymore. Meanwhile, something brews with Marathi. Who, by the way, if you don't know, Marathi has already spent her entire time as the figure of destiny or whatever, lying to all of her people, claiming that she's the only one that can sort of channel and hear Cain, the god of murder, where in reality she's holding his heart, and that's all that's left of him, and she's basically squeezing the power out of it. So she gets off to a good start as a character, is what we're saying.
Yeah, it's a model character.
Yeah, I mean, Marathi, in the old stories, too, she was always like, aha, got you at the last second kind of stuff, which, you know, I feel like at some point it's just insane. I mean, we know Sigmar's kind of a big dummy, honestly, but I don't understand why any of these characters who are smart would ever trust Marathi for any length of time, especially not after this, but yeah, she's pretty.
I don't think anybody trusts Marathi after this one.
I think her people might, but I could easily see how you could argue that some of the temples don't want to follow her anymore or split off or something. So yeah, Act 1, The Blood of Cain. Marathi thinks she's found the Blood of Cain, And she's found it in the worst possible place ever, which is in the Eight Points, which is where Archeon lives, the realm of just chaos incarnate, basically. It's a terrible place. It's awful. And she finds Veronite there, which was pretty gross, what Veronite actually is. It's the realmstone for this area. So, you know, every realm has its own little realmstone that's like magically attuned to the realm. But Veronite is, it's just gore. It looks like just sludgy, mutilated gore. Which...
And its special property just turns you into a mutant.
Yeah.
If you just slightly touch it.
Its special property is it just sucks.
It even says, if you just touch it with one of your fingers, you're just mutated. You're done. You're gone.
Yeah, it automatically makes you a chaos beast. And not only that, it corrupts the stuff around it. Like, it talks about a little bit how Archeon's troops have been trying to collect it. And they would be in, like, yeah, here it is. A stream of stuff could transform the very rock around it into a grinding maw of razor-sharp fangs, which would devour entire work crews. So you gotta figure, working for Archeon is already a pretty crap job, right? I mean, he doesn't seem like the guy who would be, like, a good boss or a friendly boss.
I don't think they get a lot of paid PTO.
No. They get one vacation day, and it's Archeon Day, and they spend the day just getting beheaded by Archeon. It's really terrible. Yeah, he's... I can't imagine this being in any way fun. And then on top of that, the sludge you are trying to harvest that looks like just the wood chipper scene from Fargo is also sometimes turning the ground into teeth and eating you. Like, you know, just any normal day on the job. They have a hell of a time at Verinspire getting OSHA approval for anything.
No, that ladder's safe. Just keep using it.
Yeah, it's
sorry,
fine.
It turned into a bunch of teeth and shredded three people so far. No, just keep it.
Excuse me, sir. The ladder has turned into a writhing snake monster made of bones that constantly screams like children. And? It's still a rope, isn't it?
You still called it a rope, so it's a rope.
Then you better climb that bone monster. Veronite had been discovered before, and everyone, I don't know if everybody knows what it is and where it is, but enough people had known that it found its way back to Marathi, or the knowledge of it did. And, of course, Marathi, being just the worst, is like, huh, well, I need to take this really horrible, powerful thing and use it to make myself a goddess, which is the natural jump of logic you hear. When you hear about sludge that is very powerful and turns things into mutants, you think, yeah, I'm gonna pour this all over myself and make myself a goddess.
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense.
I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to bathe in chaos juice?
Oh, well, shoot, I'm all for it, you know? it's a nightly ritual for me. Just pour some gore into the bathtub. I do really like the part where it talks about how they are harvesting this stuff so far with the giant worms. I thought that was... It's so... They're giant worms who are eagerly slurping up the molten realmstone. And then I like how they politely say it was drawn through the surface, through their gullets, extracted and processed. So if you thought the job of being the guy that has to deal with the rope snake ladder was rough, where do you have to take your next position as the guy who has to pull Realm Forge gore out of a worm's butt? And that's your job. That's what you do every day.
On this episode of Micro's Dirty Jobs.
My father was a worm butt extractor. My grandfather was a worm butt extractor. And now at the ripe age of 15, my son is a great... I'm 15, my son is 2. It's a very hard life out here. Yeah, so they extract it, the worms poop it, and then that's how they're doing this, and it's very slow. Which reminds me of the story of how Nagash got all of his realmstone by having a skeleton pick up a single grain of sand and then walk the billion miles with it to return it. And it's like, it takes forever. So, nice little parallel there. So, yeah, he's got, Everchosen has this. It's pretty terrible, but he hasn't done much with it so far. But Marathi, whose assassins, Shadow Stalkers, her elite assassins, the most edge of all the edge lords possible. They found out about it, and they told Marathi, and she's like, okay, I want this, but how can I also screw over every single person that I know in the process of getting this?
I have an idea.
Yeah. Who's been almost unquestionably helpful, and yet I still don't want to ever be friends with? Sigmar!
The Stormcast, that's who?
Yeah, which, I mean, I fully admit I'm a fan of Stormcast, and I really like the stories about them. This book doesn't really paint them as the bad guys, or really deserving of anything that happens to them. Like, I think it mentions that Sigmar is, like, a little cautious, but for the greater good, he'll trust Marathi to get this job done. Poor Stormcast.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot. I mean, this is a theme that kind of runs throughout this particular book, but everybody keeps kind of going along with whatever Marathi's plans are, even though everybody has a lot of hesitations about what Marathi's plans are, because everybody's like, oh yeah, she's totally going to betray us, but they can never figure out what the betrayal is going to be. And so they're like, oh, I guess we'll just go along with it until it happens. And then it's just the worst. It's always the worst.
Yeah, it's... I mean, she certainly topped herself with this book.
And yeah, oh my god, yes.
On the next page after the Varanite thing, there's just a big two-page thing about Marathi. It's got some cool art, you know. If you like your ladies snake-headed and pointy and very mad, then some cool art. But that's really just... That just explains who Marathi is, so we can kind of skip that. She's messed up. That's the easiest way to describe it. Slaanesh messed her up when she was floating around inside of his belly. And now she's mad.
She's meant to be mad about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they try to paint her as kind of a sympathetic villain a little bit with this kind of stuff, because she really is just... She was tortured forever, and then when she was reborn, she was corrupted. And not only that, like, now they're better at getting souls out, so she does, you know, if they had waited or done a better job, she wouldn't be a monstrosity. So I get it. I'm not saying I forgive her at all, but I get it. You know, see where it's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, she has she's sort of the classic Medusa story arc type of thing, where it's like, I mean, you could see where she was going with this, but don't necessarily agree with the results.
Yeah, I don't agree with all of the torture and murder. Moving on, trucking on. So she calls this council. If you're following along at home or whatever, we're on page 16 now. She basically makes Sigmar group everybody together. They all agree, yeah, Archeon's pretty terrible, and he will eventually use the Varan Knight to open up the realm to Azir and invade, you know, the only place that Chaos had never invaded. And they don't want that. So they basically, she goes, hey, he's busy dealing with these Ossiarch guys. While he's doing that, why don't we go in and destroy all his Varanite? And of course, everybody was like, well, that seems logical. And I really like the sentence that starts one of the paragraphs on page 16. That's just like, Sigmar was no fool. Like, even the guy who was tricked by a Looney Tunes trick to throw his hammer through a magic portal knows that Marathi is not a good character.
Mm-hmm.
One that just came out. So nice tie-in there. She's like, we gotta take it over, and Sigmar's like, well, okay, that doesn't make sense. I don't want to commit to a full-scale war because I'm kind of busy doing that literally everywhere else, but you know, we'll jump in and help here. And then Marathi is like, okay, cool, but I need the anvils of the Heldenhammer to come with me, specifically those guys. And I immediately knowing and liking the anvils and Anvil Guard, was like, that son of a bitch, she's pulling away their troops, isn't she? So they don't have anybody there. Yeah, and then they say it's like, even though it left the city worryingly short of defenders, that's a 5 shadowing right there. It's a lot of shadowing. So yeah, basically she asks for the Anvils, who are the Stormcast, who are the they were dead before the realm, before the whole Age of Chaos. Like they are long dead. She got that team together. She got the Kainite people, her people together, and they marched off.
The next thing they have to go after is the lantern. What's the name of it?
Ocarion? Ocarion lantern.
So another piece that Merathi needs is the Ocarion lantern, which is held by the Idaneth Deep King. And this is a relic that they took from... They took it from Teclis, didn't they? Yes.
Yeah.
And it's basically just this big lantern full of light magic. And she wants it for whatever reason she wants it. So she sends some of her shadow stalkers to go get it.
Yeah. Hey, let's not skip over the most important part. They found out where it was because of Scourge Privateers.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, I'm glad that they got little shout outs here and there.
They're getting a little bit more attention.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they'll get some new stuff. Maybe they'll even get their own armor. Who knows?
That would be cool. I think they kind of tried with the Misthaven things, and we'll get to that, but it's not really that. But hey, a little shout outs to them, I think, is kind of cool. So they're working for her, and they find the lantern. And you're right, the lantern is Teclis. He made it. It was what they originally used to draw out all the elf souls from Slaanesh. So it's pretty powerful. And she sends in these Shadow Stalkers, which are super duper assassins. I think this
which
is...
she did have to give them some enchantments and stuff to even be able to survive.
Yeah. Yeah, the Idaneth did not make this thing easy to find. They basically stuck it ridiculously far underground, underwater, and surrounded it by all-encompassing darkness, crushing depths, and I like this, it's unknowable guardians. So whatever they got down there guarding this thing is definitely not a model. It's probably just teeth and octopus parts.
Oh yeah, it's just a giant octopus.
Yeah.
Probably three.
Just
but
three.
The interesting thing is to, kind of, make the Idaneth seem even more badass. She sent in a lot of these assassins. Three score, which I don't know what a score is. Is that like 10? Who knows how many that actually is?
I think it's 10. Josh?
I don't know off the top of my head.
You should know. Do any...
Let me Google it. Three score.
Is Google going to tell you exactly what that is, I wonder?
I don't know.
This is great.
How many is three score?
This is great radio for our...
60.
So it score's 20? Okay.
Being or containing 3 times 20. 60.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
That's what we all learned today with three scores. But yeah, she sent in 60 of these highly trained enchanted assassins. And only one came out, and that one was blind and going mad.
Yeah, I imagine him just coming out, like, looking like when Elmer Fudd accidentally shoots himself with a gun. Like, he's just smoking, covered in ash, just kind of crying and whimpering, holding the lantern in his blistering hands. Yeah, whatever the Idaneth put in there almost did its job perfectly. I don't think anything else could have stolen this thing, which is for good reason. The reason the Idaneth hid it in the first place is because if they, they still feel like, well, if Teclis knows where we are, he's just gonna eliminate us because we're kind of his failed first draft of elves,
right?
Which this seems weird now that the Lumineth are out. Like, how are they? It's almost like these grand alliances are starting to not make a lot of sense.
Holy order.
Because you can put Teclis directly on the table next to a bunch of Idaneth. And you feel like at that point he would be like, oh, there you guys are.
So yeah, now Merathi has his lantern. Mm-hmm. Who knows what she'll do with it. It's a mystery to everybody.
It is. Yeah, this book kind of does not tell you her plans until the end, which I liked because, it made it a little more interesting to read. To kind of reveal it.
Another thing that seemed like a kind of reoccurring theme in this first chapter was it kept bringing up the fact that Marathi had helped all these people and has been a good ally. And after reading all of this, you gotta kind of sit back and think, has she been planning this entire time?
I think so.
Has she been friends with all these people just so she could use them for favors? And I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think Marathi plays it like, if she's your friend, it's because she thinks there's a use for you. Maybe she doesn't know the exact use yet, but she's going to go for it at some point. At some point, you will turn around and go, oh no, as she stabs you. And then you'll be like, you know, I just helped her stab the last guy. You know what it is? It's that scene in the opening of The Dark Knight where the hitmen are all paid to kill each other up until the Joker. And he's like, no, I killed the bus driver. That's Marathi's plans. It's just like, I'm just going to start at the beginning and kill everyone until it's my turn, and then I make away with everything. So yeah, she's grabbed the lantern. She's got it. And then they invade the 8 points, which goes terribly because they're invading the 8 points. There's no way it was going to go well. Like, and not only that, they have a lot of the Daughters of Cain and Stormcast, but like, when they go march to get there, they have to pass through the Everqueen's gate, which is the only one that like still functions kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, you can use my gate. You can go through the Gairan Arcway, but I am not giving you a single dryad, which is like, come on, really? That's like a 5-point model. You can't give me a single dryad? Like,
no, man, too busy fighting Nurgle.
Yeah, too bad. Got this Nurgle thing. I got this itch. I'm dealing with this rash, guys, so I can't come out. Like, you know, waiting for it to flare down.
And she didn't even want to open the gate. It was only because Marathi helped her against the plague gun that she kind of was like, okay, just this once.
Yeah, it makes sense. She's basically, since the story has started for Alloriel, she's lost almost every fight, except for the ones where somebody else showed up to help her. And Nurgle pretty much beat her consistently through the first couple of years of the setting. So I want to say that realm is still like half Nurgle, pretty much. Like, he's got a pretty good hold on it. So it makes sense. She doesn't want to just open a door to Archeon in her backyard, you know. And she's trusting Sigmar, the not particularly forward-thinking god, and Marathi, who is forward-thinking way too much. So yeah, she's probably the smartest character in the book, where she's like, I'll let you through the door, but I'm going to lock it behind you. I'm going to stay out of this.
So they whipped open this portal, this archway, this grand gate, and all the Chaos Warriors are just kind of sitting there like, we're ready. We're holding our blades and our axes. We're in this big, badass fortress. But nothing came out until a giant wave of water. Alloriel just took a waterfall and basically just shot it at.
Yes. That, I thought that was pretty funny. It's like, because you can definitely see that in a movie where it opens and the music is all tense and then they're just kind of standing there looking at it and then they have to look back and forth a couple times and then finally just a cascade of water bursts through the gate and just starts
and then
drowning them.
Basically just like four giant holes into this giant brass fortress. They're just trees and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it does make you wonder. It's like, oh, you can do that, but I can't take like a tree lord or two? So a weird investment. But I guess, you know, she didn't have to go through the door to do that.
Yeah. She just kind of held the curtain open and was like, oops, go.
Yeah, I do like weaponizing waterfalls. It's a good, that's a good phrase.
Go chasing waterfalls.
You know, it's true. They Chaos armies should have stuck to the rivers and the streams they were used to.
They should have.
Unfortunate. So, tragic. Moving on. After they get in there, they basically storm into the 8 points. And even after that impressive attack, they're still really just caught in a almost constant fight. Which makes sense. This realm is entirely hostile to pretty much everything. It's hostile to itself. So if you're in this realm, you're just constantly fighting, whether it's against the animals, the chaos tribes, the demons, you know, the plants, the ground itself. Like, everything is just, it wants a piece of you. This planet is mean.
And this is basically the D&D Underdark part of the campaign.
Yeah, yeah, everything is evil and it wants to hurt you.
So it's just, it's a slog.
Oh, it absolutely is. And so they're slogging through. We're not going to go maneuver by maneuver, but there's a cool little story talking about, like, the actual fighting they do. And it talks a little bit more about how Marathi, like, she's clearly planning something because she's kind of like, no, I'll send my riders to go tell your guys this. Don't worry, I got this. Like, there's a lot of moments of, you know, oh, I'll handle it for you kind of stuff that she does, which you're like, oh, that means she's not going to do it the right way. And we're introduced also to my favorite character in the whole book, the Lord Veritant, Kaiser Van Brecht. I probably am not saying that right. Maybe I got pretty close. I don't know. He is a hunter of demon worshippers and death cults. So kind of the old school witch hunter that they had in fantasy, the tall hat gun guy, was kind of a famous character-ish design. That's kind of what this guy does. So he's all about, like, the Anvil Guard. He just hunts down chaos worshippers, drags them out in the street, and beats them to death. Like, he, you know, he messes people up professionally who are bad guys. And the coolest thing about him, he has an oath to destroy every last remnant of his dynasty, which are vampires. Because when the, after he was reforged, he went and he kind of, I don't know if he went there or he found out about it somehow, but all of his family and his friends, basically his whole community, had embraced the Soulblight curse in order to survive the Age of Chaos and became vampires. And now they hang out as vampire warlords. And I think that's really cool, because this guy's like, he's all about killing his old family who are vampires. I mean, that's good story writing to me right there. Because I'm going to care about him when he shows back up, because I want to see him go punch some vampires in the face. Which also, for everyone that's like, oh man, they're definitely hinting at vampire pirates. If they're going to introduce vampire pirates as a story thing, like in this story, this guy seems like a really good lead into it, because he's, you know, hanging out with a bunch of pirates near the end of it, and he hates vampires. And he also has a ability in his battalion that adds one to his damage if he's targeting a vampire, which is one of those weirdly specific things that I love in Age of Sigmar, where they're like, plus one if he's targeting a Lord Relictor. It's like, well, that's really helpful. But yeah, so this guy, he's pretty cool. He's leading one of the forces. They march through.
And in the shadows, as they march, is Glavia Sinhart.
Mm-hmm.
Can't gloss over her.
It's the entity known as Glavia Sinhart, once served as an attendant of the Dark Prince. Yeah, so Glavia is, they are, I guess, just like kind of a bard, almost a soothsayer, like a storyteller of Slaanesh.
Yeah, it would like just go to Slaanesh and just tell Slaanesh about all the people it's caught and lured and tormented. And it was so loved by Slaanesh that it basically just got all his blessings. He can go into people's dreams and just trap them in a dream forever.
Yeah.
And since Slaanesh has gone missing, Glavia's been getting little visions from Slaanesh. And has been trying to follow these omens. And now, well, Glavia is here.
I think they're pretty close. I gotta say, they're pretty close. Yeah, and I may be wrong, but I think this is the only little character call-out they have that doesn't get any sort of, like, rules benefits or anything.
Yeah.
Or, like, a special battalion or whatnot. I may be wrong. But it seems weird that they kind of talk about them, and then there's nothing yet, but I have a feeling that's just because we haven't gotten to that part of the story yet. Like,
I don't think old Lor Khanum, Venadrize. Did that one have?
I'm sorry. I'm going to need you to say that again before I'm allowed to answer that question.
Man, I butchered the last name on that one. But you'll Lord Arcanum Venadri is god. Just kill me now. Just put me out of misery, please.
I don't think so. You're right. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I know there's the characters where they list the big list of characters. I know not all of them got stuff, but I guess out of the ones that seemed kind of important, Glavia maybe struck me as that. But like I said, I think that's just because we haven't gotten to that book yet. And it's going to be a hell of a reveal party that they have to have. Yeah, they march through. They're killing stuff. They're getting basically beaten. Not back, but they're having a very hard time making progress. And Marathi has kind of like gone to the... I completely blanked on this. Catacross, there we go. She went to Catacross. Of course, did not tell Sigmar about this, because that would be very disappointing for him. And was like, hey, we're going to be doing this whole thing over here. While we're doing this, why don't you take another shot at Archeon? Like, we know you want that guy, you know, so go for it. Seize some more territory. And Catacross he's like, yeah, okay. So my theory is that Catacross, being like the literal smartest tactician guy ever, and also having the power of just simply never dying, if you kill him, he just goes into a new body. I think he probably knew this was part of some horrible scheme for Marathi, but he's like, well, I don't like you, and I don't like Sigmar, and I don't like Archeon. So yeah, go for it. I'll throw some bone guys at it. Because if you win a fight as an Ossiarch Empire, you just gain more Ossiarch Empire. And you can't really lose unless you just stop fighting. So it's almost like he just goes, yeah, okay, whatever. We'll go out and we'll go destroy his mining operations. And if it makes him, if the God King's armies suffer grievously in the attempt, so much the better. I like that. I like that little throwaway to the Ossiarchs just hanging out, doing stuff. Not a lot of destruction in this book, though. That's pretty much the only shot out we get that isn't order or chaos. So,
yeah.
I'm sure we'll get that book later. We'll get that'll be the last book for Broken Realms. It'll be Broken Realms Gordrak. And the whole book is him just going around punching everyone in the face for all this shenanigans. He's just like, stop being sneaky, whack, stop being stupid, whack. And he just beats everybody to death. And then he blows up the Iron Throne or whatever. And then he leaves. That's the end of Age of Sigmar. Turns out if he had just been able to find his way there, he would have done that earlier, but orcs are really bad at directions.
They basically just go forward.
Yeah. Yeah, forward doesn't work when there's multiple planes of existence, and that's why they hadn't gotten there. But when they get there, they just win. So, I completely lost my place. Oh, yeah. After several grueling days of advance, they cross the marsh, and they're at the foothills of these Skull Pikes. I gotta wonder if the people who make the maps for the 8 points, like, do they name things this? Are they sitting around and they're like, what do we call those mountains? Called the Blood Teeth! And those will be the Skull Pikes. Those will be the Appalachians. I mean, the Torture Pains! Sorry, Torture Pains. And then we get to the next part. Shadow and Treachery, which is where things start to get shadowy and treacherous.
It is where we get the old hoodwink.
Oh, yeah. She pulls some shenanigans.
She does, in fact, pull some shenanigans here. And basically, she goes, you know what? I'm going to poison my allies. I'm going to grab the stuff that I want, and I'm going to dip.
Yep. Yeah, so her whole plan is to take a small forge down into the depths themselves, the subterranean hellscape beneath the 8 points. And their goal is they're going to go down there and basically sabotage all the stuff where the worms are feeding, while the main force of Stormcast and Daughters of Cain fight as if they were going like kind of a different direction. So a little bit of misdirection there. And so they get down in here, and you're right. Not the first thing she does, but there's one, there's a sacrosanct chamber who are doing all the kind of fights. You talk about the Lord Arcanum, Venerdrys?
Yeah, it's your turn now.
The Lord Arcanum Ven, and her warriors, easy way out. And she is the only one that sees that there's some shenanigans afoot.
Some trickery?
Some trickery? Because she sees that there's little imperfections in the scene that Marathi's magic has woven around them as they're fighting in these dark tunnels. And it's, you know, there's a really cool picture, like these lava fortress things. It's cool looking. It looks like Cataclysm. Just go look at that. But yeah, they're down in there dealing with that stuff. And Marathi is keeping this magic up so that the Stormcast have no idea what's going on. And when they do, she starts to kind of like call out to the Stormcast, but she can't because she's been poisoned. And not only is it bad to be poisoned, if you're a Stormcast, it's especially bad because you don't die.
Yeah.
And if you don't die, you can't go tell Sigmar that you guys are getting shanked. And I thought that's a really smart way to deal with that, because that's kind of a deus ex machina to a lot of problems with a Stormcast. And there's even a book, it even happens in this book too, where they're in a really bad situation and one of them is like, all right, kill me, I guess. I'll go back and tell the boss. And then it's like, oh yeah, there's not a whole lot of threat when your characters just return with not a ton of problems.
Yeah.
But yeah, she gets paralyzed, and then as they're all cut down, they can't return back to Sigmar, so there's no way he could possibly have stopped this. And then she basically swings the worms over, cuts them open, and then pours their insides, you know, that delicious, wormy Varanite inside, into these cauldrons that she brought, which she's magically hooked back up to Hagnar, the mother cauldron. So every drop of Varanite goes to Hagnar. And soon the punctured bowels of the demon beasts were all but empty. Aw. Poor worms, you know. They're just doing they're just doing this stuff. I mean, they had a good life. I guess if you're a worm, it's like, we get to hang here, eat this delicious gore, and there's little people that clean out our butts for us.
And some of those worms only had, like, 2 days to retirement.
What? Yeah, really. One of them had just gotten his pension thing worked out. It was awful.
Rough. It's a rough way to go.
Rough life for the worms. So, yeah, they get through all of this stuff. Then we kind of fly back up to the top, narrative-wise. There's more Stormcast and stuff fighting. They get to the Valley of Ashes, littered with corpse dust and scorched bones. So, you know, pretty much everywhere else in this entire area.
Yeah.
And they see a ridiculously huge Chaos army, larger than any they had seen. And this is a setting where they throw around millions like nothing. So I imagine they were just like, hey, that ocean is moving. Oh, that ocean is people. And they had 8 shrines. A little chaos shrine action, which is cool. I like when they drag out the old models and kind of make them the star for a little bit. So there's 8 chaos shrines, and everybody stares at each other. The fighting starts. It is a big battle. But there's something kind of scary in here. Do you guys remember what was so scary for the Stormcast? Again, a terrible day to be a Stormcast?
Yeah, the shrines, when as the Stormcast would fall, the shrines would glow and kind of take the Stormcast essence into them so that they were not able to be reforged and reborn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Stormcast down below are poisoned so that they can't...
And stuck.
And basically just stuck. And then these guys, if they die honorably, they don't come back. Or they don't know really what's going on, but it's pretty assumed that they're not going to come back out of that shrine. So, yeah,
it makes you think a lot about what the heck that Chaos Shrine is, right?
Yeah, why can't my Chaos Shrine do that? It just gives out a prayer on a 3-up. Like,
yeah.
Seems a little underpowered for what this is telling me it can do. Yeah, so they fight, and the Stormcast are like, this is not a good fight at all. We're introduced to another character who does get a special rules thing and a box. The Idolator Lord Rokar Gresh. That is a great orc name for a non-orc character.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed.
Yeah. So Rokar Gresh is a giant of a man. Basically, he's the guy on the back of the Chaos Chariot with the two-handed axe. We don't get a lot about him. He has all of the character development of, he's a big, mean guy who likes to hit stuff. Which I guess in a book full of characters, they can't all be interesting vampire hunters. One of them has to just be Smash Face the Axeman.
What Oh, no, he has a much better axe name than that, sir.
Oh, Soul Butcher? Yes. Sorry.
Which, the axe is a Baronite axe, which, if you paid attention earlier, they said that very few people have Baronite.
Yeah, oh, he's...
This guy's a verifiable badass.
Well, and if he is leading an army in the 8 points, where literally everyone will kill you to take your position at some point, yeah, he's... I mean, he's clearly pretty... tough. Like, he's not Archeon tough. He should probably be a little tougher than the base stats for the Chaos Chariot, to be honest, but you know, I get they didn't put out a brand new character for him. And his army is all Marauders, so while it is like thousands and thousands and millions of guys, if you think about it in game terms, it's just the Warcry armies, and they're not great, honestly, in Age of Sigmar. So it's like, yeah, there's millions of them, but probably when the fighting starts, they're all kind of crumbling over. But this guy is pretty cool. And I like, you know, I like the chariot stuff. That's pretty neat. So he rides in. He's smashing stuff up. And we know the souls are going to the shrines, which is where the page ends. This book does a good job of ending every page like a Goosebumps story, where it's like, they were well, truly trapped.
I got Goosebumps just from reading.
Oh, nice. Nice. And then we get a big story here talking about Van Brecht again, as he's basically just kicking butt across the battlefield. I like it. I like the impression this little story gets on page 28, where they talk about the witch elves, how they're like having a great time, doing somersaults, opening throats, just living the dream. And the Stormcaster like, oh, they're way too into this. This is not, we are not comfortable.
But it does say that he did escape. He didn't get sucked into the shrine.
Oh yeah, no. So what happens is Kaiser gets beat up pretty bad. And he basically, well, so it's him and what's the other guy's name? I'm trying to find it in the Nihilat? Yeah, so it's these two, and he's a Lord Celestin, so that would be the commander of this force, basically, in Stormcast. They're killing everything. They finally managed to take down a shrine. But like I said, when they do, Van Brecht is thrown and basically breaks his back. So this guy's got elements of Van Helsing and Batman. They're just trying to make the coolest person possible. So he falls and he's like, oh no, my back. Well, I better do some sit-ups and it'll magically get healed in a prison hole. That movie didn't make a lot of sense. But no, instead his friend Nihilat is like, well, guess I gotta kill you. And Van Brecht is like, yep, gotta do that thing. So he stabs him, which is interesting because they didn't know that the shrine was like, I mean, they knew it was broken, but they didn't know if their plan had worked. So that's a pretty big risk of this Kaiser guy to just be like, yeah, go ahead and stab me and let's hope that I come back.
Well, at the end of the day, it's not much of a risk. It's happening either way.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you can't walk, you're not really going to do a lot. I think it'd strap you to a Drakoth or something and let you swing at people. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, it's either we die or we die, and at least this way it's not like in a horrible, horrible fashion. But he does return to Azir. It manages to jump his soul up and he gets away.
Pretty much the only lucky one.
That guy's gonna come back. Hey, I have an idea. Before we hit Act 2, why don't we hear a quick word from one of our sponsors?
Gigabytes Cafe in Marietta, Georgia is your one-stop shop for everything you need for your favorite hobby or fandom. They carry a huge selection of Games Workshop and other miniature lines, as well as hobby and crafting supplies to keep your forces looking great on the table. Not a wargamer? They also stock hundreds of different tabletop games, from classics to new releases, not to mention all of the CCGs, TCGs, D&D supplies, and any other nerd-based acronym you can think of. You can shop online 24/7, and they even offer a contactless pickup option. So what are you waiting for? Go to GigabytesOnline.com to start shopping now and take your game to the next level.
And back with Act 2.
And we're back.
Act 2.
The Rise of a Goddess. And we're done with Act 2, The Rise of...
No, there's good stuff here.
Oh, yeah, I guess you care about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I care about what's happening here. I mean, there's a whole big fight.
There's a lot of cool stuff in this book. I joke, yeah. But honestly, except for the Daughters of Cain parts, I love everything in here. And honestly, that's not a huge part of the story. Like, Marathi is a part of the story, but they don't, there's not a whole lot about, like, the Daughters of Cain as a collection, as a faction, really. Yeah. So yeah, we get another cool map that is almost completely incomprehensible the first time you look at it. Like, I challenge anyone to look at this map and make any sense of what is going on. It's just, it's a swirly map of letters.
There's names on it.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're pointing to necessarily.
Well, you can plan out your vacation.
I don't think it's a place that I want a vacation to.
Really? I was thinking about, you know, you go to Olgu. I mean, when you're in Olgu, you gotta go to the Vale of Broken Hopes, okay? You can get a coin, and a small starving child will press it down flat for you with their bare teeth. It's a great little thing to bring home. When you're done there...
Fun for the whole family.
Yeah, when you're done there, you're gonna want to take the trolley ride across the maddening Skrull. You'll probably lose a relative or an arm to a tentacle at that point, but that's okay. And then you're going to hit up Choking Neck, which, you know, that's a big popular spot for the whole family. Be sure to pick up your Choking Neck ceremonial hat with spikes on the inside. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then once you're done with all that, head over to Grimace, which is founded by the giant purple monster of Grimace fame.
And then you head over to Haghar, where the story picks up.
Yeah, so... Hagnar, which I believe is, like, the main thing.
I believe it is capital.
Yeah. We should have spoilered that none of us play Daughters of Cain, and while I have the book, I haven't literally picked it up in over a year.
Yeah, it sneaks out my thing, so I've never really looked into them. But maybe I'll go back and read them.
Yeah. I think they're a really cool army. For me, army-wise, it was just they're very glass cannon, and they didn't really do it for me. Like, they don't look super interesting to me. Honestly, the coolest part to me were the snake archers. And up until this book, those were, like, the worst models. So, never really cared. Oh, yeah, so we're back to Marathi. She's got the goop, and she's going to try to unlock the secrets of the ooze and use it to transform herself into a goddess, which is basically a big ritual where she gets a cauldron, fills it up, and then their whole plan, this was kind of a complex, weird plan. Like, their goal is to, I don't even know how to start with this, because it kind of wraps around itself. Oh, like a snake. I get it. Anyway, she has a passage into Slaanesh's gut, essentially. And their plan is to feed Slaanesh a champion of Khorne, Nurgle, and Tzeentch, or champions of Khorne, Nurgle, and Tzeentch. And in doing so, basically gives Slaanesh indigestion. Like, The whole plan is to make Slaanesh a little sick in his tummy-tum by feeding him gross things. She's getting that plan together, and only the Skaithborn, which are her, like, super-duper trusted people, know that she's not trying to summon Cain back, that she's going to use the power to turn into a goddess. And then we get a little flash story on the next page talking about some fish people doing a cool scene from 2018's Aquaman.
Well, yeah, because the fish people are pissed, man.
Yeah.
Like, we gotta go get our lantern back.
Yeah, this story is really cool because I like, A, that just giving a voice to the characters is always kind of neat. And I like the way that they call out the different enclaves and kind of give you a little, it's like in the movie where they show them for a few seconds and they're showing a room full of aliens and you're like, oh, that's a unique thing. Oh, that guy's got cool guns. Oh, those people have wings. Like, they kind of pick a little bit out of each one of them to show you.
I'd also just say that all the, like, the enclaves are then kind of uniting under a single banner in the mutual interest of making sure they all survive to see another day type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and the reason they do this is because one of the Eidoneth people, I don't remember which enclave it was from, they grabbed a weapon from the temple, and they were like, hey, this is the work of Hagnar. Marathi moves against us. And, like, I almost don't know that that was intentional. Like, I feel like maybe if Marathi had not had to deal with this, it would have gone according to plan. She still spins it. But this was probably not originally in her design, was for the Eidoneth to come at her full force.
Mm-hmm.
At least not in a unified sense. Which... High King Volturnos is the guy to do it. He shows up and he's like, listen here, you can either do this or we might all just die if we don't. I do like past time we put those Cainites in their proper place. Yeah, nobody really likes the Daughters of Cain, I imagine. No. When you openly worship a god of murder, like, it's hard to work with your coworker who's just like, yeah, I like killing folks on the weekend. Just luring them out to my house and killing them. Yeah, what'd you bring for lunch today? Like, how do you work with somebody like that? And we introduced another character in here. I think he's another character. I don't know, Josh, I don't know if you know King Nemitar. Has he been in stuff before? The guy that gets the Alopex battalions?
I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure.
I can't remember, like, I've never read the Eidoneth book, the King Volturnos book, so I don't know if he showed up before. But this guy shows up and is like, my Alopexes, they have her scent. We'll get her.
And boy, do they kind of try.
And boy, do they don't.
Yeah, it doesn't grow great. It's, yeah, spoiler. But yeah. It's not fantastic.
So Marathi knew somebody was going to gun for her, because when she's doing this ritual to become a goddess, she knows she's not defenseless, but pretty much defenseless herself. So she needs, like, to be on super guard. Because if you wanted to take her out, which is a list of multiple names that continuously grows, then you're going to, if you know about it, this is going to be when you do it. So she has her Hagnar First Temple totally covered up, lots of stuff there. She also brings in Fleetmaster Nightscour of the Free City of Misthaven, which is a city we have read about but was not included in Cities of Sigmar, because it is not a Cities of Sigmar in terms of story concept. Like, if you thought Anvilgard was bad, this place makes Anvilgard look like the Pirates of the Caribbean, the Disney ride, like the animatronic one. The Misthaven people are just, they're awful. In like a piratey, all for ourselves, scourgy kind of way. They're not Marathi awful. We gotta parse out these nuances of awfulness here. I also really like the description of Misthaven there at the bottom of 38, because it's just a bunch of boats, like, yeah, lashed together. And
so redneck duck.
It is. It's a bunch of boats that they have duct taped together. And then if they get attacked, the boats can just float off. And if they get, like, super attacked, the boats can just scatter like little fishies.
Yeah.
It's like you turn on the light of Sigmar and all of these roaches just dive out from under the fridge and run in every which direction. I think that's really cool. And it's a hive of criminality, vice, and deception by the other free cities, which some of these other free cities are looking down on you. You're not doing very well in the PR department. But that's probably why they'd work for Marathi, because, honestly, who else likes them?
I'm going to go with no one.
Yeah.
The list is not very long.
Yeah, like, no one trusts these guys. They don't trust Marathi. This is when the bad guys all team up, but they're just constantly, like, slowly pulling a dagger out of their belt and then putting it back in when the person turns back around. It's like, am I? No, okay, I'll kill you later. No, okay.
So then if you were playing bingo with this book, I'm not sure if you would have seen me or had Giant Sea Battle in Hag Anal Bay on your card.
I did, but for different reasons that we won't get into. But yeah, there's a ton of semen in Hag Anal Bay, and it just goes crazy. There's the Namardi show up, the warrior thralls, which are the dudes on foot, and they just start attacking the city, or I guess the temple? Yeah, temple.
Temple, yeah.
Yeah. And once again, nice throw out to the Scourge Privateers. They've kind of like, they think they have naval superiority, and to be fair, against everything that fights on the top of the ocean, they do. But the Eidoneth bring the ocean to you. So they don't really...
With Leviathans!
Yeah, they don't really have the same level of ability if they're fighting like a bunch of Stormcast on a boat who don't know how to use the boat.
Right.
Yeah. So they team up, and King Volturnos shows up, and he's like, yeah, I got all these people, let's do this. He's got a cold and quiet pride as he looks upon the host he's assembled. I mean, it's like every Eidoneth faction at once, which is pretty cool. You know, they line up their giant Avengers Endgame moment, and then crash into it. And the fight starts. And they do pretty well, actually, for the Eidendeath. Like, they have the upper hand on a lot of this stuff. Like I said, the Scourge Privateer... this is why I think that Marathi maybe didn't expect the Eidendeath to come after her, is because the Scourge Privateers would have been able to handle anything that showed up on a boat. But flying sharks is a bit more of a problem, because they're all around you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically fight, and then they're like, you know what? We're not getting paid enough for this. We out. See ya. Which, I don't know, you hire a bunch of thieves and scoundrels, and then they leave halfway through the fight. Well, who would have seen that coming? But the Hagnar, the people that live there, the death cults and whatnot, they fight hard. It's a terrible battle.
And then there's a problem.
Yeah, well, there's multiple problems start happening. Which problem are you talking about? Let's go with your problem.
I'm talking about the problem for the Eidendeath in particular, where it's like, hey, we've got a good thing going, guys, and then fucking Slaanesh shows up.
Yeah, because it's not a party. Unless Slaanesh is just like, hey, you guys murdering? We love murdering. And then Slaanesh just shows up, and they don't fight the Witch Elves. There's a good scene where they go past the Scourge Privateers and the Witch Elves, which... The Scourge Privateers, I feel like, were already out on this point. They were already, like, starting to pack up. Then Slaanesh shows up, and they're like, you know what, we're leaving. Let's go. Like, hey, whatever this is, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. Everyone put on your Slaanesh costumes and start backing the ship up. Just beep, 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 is back out of it. The Slaaneshis show up, and it seems like they're gonna win. Or at least they're, gonna have a much harder time. And yeah, it mentions Glavia again, her exalted chariot burst from the hold of her ship, churning up a bloody spray as it sped under the corpse-strewn sands. Yeah, nice. I always imagine the secret chariots just sound like blenders, or like, you know, those old lawnmowers that you had to push that weren't electric.
Yeah,
like, that's what it always reminds me of, is just that, like, if you could line up all your army men, if you were like a sociopath as a child, and then just run over them with a lawnmower. That's kind of what they happen.
I always envisioned it kind of like a wood chipper. Like, that's the sound in my head.
Yeah, oh, I can see that too. Just bang. Yeah, it's horrible. They murder everything. And yeah, Night Scour and her corsairs are like, yeah, cool. We done.
I think our job here is done. Yeah. I just leave. And it's like, wait, what? No, you didn't do anything.
It's that Sailor Moon meme. My job here is done, but you didn't do anything. And then they just sweep their capes over their head and they're away. So yeah, Volturnus is like, oh, tits, this is not going well. I got Slaanesh on one side, I got Hagnar on the other, and it's not a DeviantArt drawing, so it's not in the good way. What am I going to do here? And then he decides to just go ahead and fight his way straight into Marathi. Like, you know what? I came here for a reason. I'm going to get that reason done. So he basically rode the Aether Sea into the skies, smashed through the flying canary, the harpy people, and then flew into the Clawless. Like, they're ready to go. He's like, I'm 1v1 me, Marathi. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, while this is going on...
Can we also talk about, or we're not there yet? Nope. Yes. No. I think we're past this.
Wait, what are we?
Can we talk about the Scourge Privateers took some of the Leviathans?
Oh yeah, where was that? I remember that. Was that? Oh
it's
yeah.
On the bottom of 33.
Yeah, it's they were leaving. Nightscour had he ordered. I think I said she. I don't remember which one it is, but Nightscour orders a retreat. And then they capture a pair of Leviathans. Which makes sense, because Scourge Privateers lore-wise are all about capturing giant monsters and selling them. I was sad that this book did not include rules to include a Leviathan in a Scourge Privateer army. Because I was about to not go out and buy one because they're expensive. But at some point, I was going to buy one and just take all the Eidendeath off and put the Scourge Privateers on it, make it like a pirate turtle, give it a little eye patch. That'd be so cool. But no. It would have been. You could still do it. I got some extra Scourge Privateers if you want them.
I do not have an extra Leviathan, so.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that has them laying around.
Man.
So, yeah.
One day.
David, that is a cool part. I hope that he surfed away with 1 foot on each of them, but I know that they're a little too big for that. But in my head, I hope that's how he stole them, as he just lashed them together and was like, goodbye, everyone! Just surfed his turtles out. And now back to the horrifying grimdark part of the story, which is Marathi's ritual that she does. Pretty gross. So she, like we mentioned earlier, her whole thing is, I'm going to feed Slaanesh these Khorne, Tzeentch, and Nurgle followers. And they will make Slaanesh really, really sick, because it will be like, hey, thanks for the food. I haven't feasted in forever. Oh, no. This is all poison, basically, to me. While he's doing that, while he's being sick to his stomach, Marathi's plan is to go inside his stomach, kill and eat all of these elves' souls that are in there that are, like, powerful elves. So I guess these would be characters from the old world, you know, which if you were really hoping they were going to bring back some old world elves, I'm not sure I think there's one left. We hear about one, and then that's really it. So she jumps into the cauldron of goop, and there's a whole big story of it. The biggest thing to take out of this story, because she does go in, and it's, you know, it's the inside of Slaanesh, so it's very disorienting, but she can see the souls, basically, that bear a little flicker of divinity. Like, just a little, because elf souls are pretty hardy, I think, and these are, like, the ones that had, even now they were still held out. It does mention some of these beings she had known in a life long lost to her, some she had hated, some she had feared, one amongst them she had even loved. So she goes through and basically starts killing all these souls and whatnot. There are two bad things that happen because of this. One is bad to her, which, you know, hooray. But one is kind of bad for the entirety of probably the mortal universe in this book. We'll go, the first thing that happens that's bad to her is she gets all the souls but one, and as she's killing them all, there's one that is the most powerful of all, and she goes to kill it, and then she doesn't. She hesitates. And when she hesitates, that's when the being is like, whoop, not dealing with this, and cleaves her in half, which is pretty cool for a soul to do. Obviously, the soul did not want to be absorbed by Marathi or Slaanesh.
Yeah, very much a nah dude moment.
Yeah, so it cleaved her in half, and, well, it didn't cleave, I guess it didn't cleave her entirely in half, but it became a sword of fire and blood, so it literally transformed into a sword, just horribly mutilates her, and as she falls to the ground, and basically it says, the viscous torrent coalesced into a shimmering protean shape that raced after the retreating Shadow Queen. So in traditional horror movie moment, she brought something back with her that she wasn't supposed to bring back.
Her shadow.
Well, yeah, it was, yeah. That and the even worse, the baby, the Slaaneshi baby. Yeah, because that's, I think, the sword, which I don't know if either of you guys know who Anarion is. He's the guy who stabbed her. He is the sword guy, by the way. In case you're like, who is that? He was her husband, and probably the only character in the old world that she actually loved and cared about more than herself, which is why she hesitated. There's no telling if he even remembers anything, or if it was just like, oh, a threat, I must react, and that's why he attacked her. But she recognized him. And so her one moment of, not humanity, elf-manity? Decency? Is what gets her attacked and almost killed.
She still got what she wanted, kind of, technically.
We think. Like, I don't know. That's contention.
That's the challenge here, isn't it?
She bursts out of the Slaanesh realm thing. Like, she's now out of the ritual. Glavia is outside. They're doing all this killing stuff, having a great time. And then they see an indistinct shape trailing lurid colors as it arced across the sky. It screamed across the ocean and left a massive plume of superheated steam in its wake, and all of the Hedonites are like, that's our thing, and they just chase after it. They just abandon the fight and leave. And I'm sure that that will not come back in any way, shape, or form to cause any amount of damage to anybody that Slaanesh gave birth. So yeah, Slaanesh gives birth, and Marathi becomes a goddess, question mark? Because we hear her refer to herself as a goddess, right? And mm-hmm. we the book says thing. It says like the risen goddess, like they in the text. So I know we're supposed to assume she is, but she doesn't really do a lot. Like, she, I mean, her shadowy thing beats up King Volturnus, which is like, oh, okay, the guy just fought a 12,000 point battle. He manages to get in here and you take a cheap shot and take him out. Like, I don't know that that's really what a goddess does. That's, you know, that's a couple of lucky shots from a Stormcast Ballista takes him out. I don't know. I don't know if we're supposed to know that she is. Is she at the power level of Nagash, Sigmar, like that? Or is she like Archaon, where she's not 100% a deity, but she might as well be, because nothing can possibly stop her but a deity?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we'll find out. I can't see this book ending with everybody going back to the dinner table and being like, well, that was a lesson we all learned together. I'm pretty sure she's not going to get invited to Thanksgiving ever again.
Okay. So then we get to her, I guess, what I mean, for me, it's the most interesting and bizarre turn of this story, where a High King Volturnus is like, I'm going to kill you, and then they fight, and it doesn't work. And then she's like, you know what? It's cool. We don't have to be enemies anymore. Here's your lantern back. It's got a couple dents in it. It's fine. But, oh, here's some souls that you won. And we can totally just be friends and allies going forward, right?
Yeah. Yeah, her whole thing is like, hey, listen, if Teclis finds out about us and this, he'll kill us both. Which, once again, how does this make any sense when we've got Teclis literally running around? Like, how does he not know about the Eidneth? He's never run into one? I don't know. But
dumb as Sigmar, maybe?
I don't know. He's supposed to be one of the smartest creatures in the entire setting, so I don't know. I think maybe he does know, but he's kind of like, if I go kill him, I'm going to be a bad guy. Maybe I'll just leave him alone. Like, just whatever. They're under the sea. You know, who cares? But yeah, Marathi's like, hey, we can team up. Well, also, I imagine she's saying this. I mean, she's literally saying it as he has been knocked from his mount and is, like, laying on the ground. And
yeah, he doesn't have a lot of options.
No, his options are basically die or we can be friends. And the Eidneth are very logical. They're very Vulcan in that sense, where he's like, well, we do want the lantern back, and I would like these souls of the Scythi, I think? Which are his kinmates who were slain centuries ago. Because he's not I don't want to say a real Eidneth. He's not the same as the other Eidneth. He's like a super proto one. So these souls would be pretty
good.
He's
old school.
Yeah. He was kind of like, well, okay, I guess you can speak your piece. Which, once again, the other option was, she's probably just going to eat you right there, son. So,
yeah,
smart play by him. And then we get this full page art on the next page, which, holy crap, I love this picture. It's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
There's something for everything. You like giant snakes busting out of big incense dishes from Walmart for $4.99? You got it. You like snake ladies? You got it. You like flying harpy thongs getting attacked by eels using magical seawater? You didn't know that was your thing, but now it is, because it's right here. Like, this page is cool. And it's very, opposed to all the other Sigmar art we've seen, it's very shadowy. I mean, it makes sense. It's taking place in the Realm of Shadow. But it's not, it doesn't have that kind of He-Man look that a lot of the art does, where it's a little too clean. Like, the early Khorne and Sigmar stuff doesn't look great. Like, they're too shiny. Even the Khornites are, like, shiny He-Man characters. But I like this. This art was really cool. I like that there's just a harpy drop-kicking a guy in the face, like, front and bottom center on the bottom left. Just this one-eyed enough guy is, like, these elite warriors, but you know what happens if you don't have eyeballs? You get drop-kicked in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks.
You got dropped. You know it's going bad because there's some Eidoneth archers and behind them are some Cainite archers. Like, I don't know where this battle is.
Yeah, I did notice that. If you look underneath the tail of that king, the Achillean king, I don't know if that's supposed to be Volturnus or not, but if you look under his tail, those are definitely the snake lady archers. Like, they have the helmets, but that's in the pile of Eidoneth, so nobody knows what's going on. It's a chaotic mess. Marathi wins, and her plan gets even more dastardly. So before we hear about the part of the story that made me very upset with Marathi, how about one more sponsor? Would you guys like that? Let's hear it for some cat food!
Cat food!
Starting your own podcast is easier than you think with Blueberry Podcasting, the official home of Atlanta Warhammer. Not only do they make uploading and hosting audio files a breeze, they also feature full WordPress integration, so you can easily share your podcast with the world. All Blueberry podcasts are optimized for Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and about 100 other podcast services. They even have a free tech support and downloads, and with no contract, you can cancel anytime. To get started today, visit blueberry.com. That's BLUBRRY.com. While you're there, use the code ATLWAR to get 1 month of premium hosting totally free. Once again, that's promo code ATLWAR at blueberry.com. Get your voice heard today.
And welcome back to Act 3, Anvil Guard in Darkness, which is the chapter where the heroic characters of Anvil Guard rise up and defeat Marathi and also Nagash, and everything is fine forever, right? Good book, guys.
Yeah.
Surprise ending, you know, but I liked it.
That's not what happens at all.
That's not at all what happens. That's So yeah, Anvil Guard. This is my favorite city of the Cities of Sigmar. And it's one of the most well-developed. It's been in a lot of books. There's all of the Soulbound, not all of it, but a lot of the Soulbound RPG stuff is set in Anvil Guard. They just released a big expansion that takes place in Anvil Guard. This is a well-known piece of the lore here. And so for a quick rundown, it's a city in Akshi. It was one of the first ones founded when they took everything back from Corgus Coal and Korn in the Realm of Fire. It is next to a big tropical jungle, and basically it's Stormcast and then a bunch of other stuff, mostly elvish, mostly like the old dark elf models. So that's basically it. And it is, like Misthaven, a city of crime and fear, but less so, less outright murdering in the streets, more like subtle murdering in the sheets. It's still run by this organization called the Blackscale Coil, pretty much underneath everything. But there is a Stormcast chamber here of anvils. Now, if you remember from earlier, there's a lot less anvils of the Heldenhammer here currently, for some reason. It's still a place where you want to watch your purse, and probably your butt, wherever you go anywhere, and your throat, and anything else that's valuable, because somebody might try to steal it.
Watch all your things.
Yeah, just don't go out, basically. Just either be a hero or don't live in any of these cities. What has been happening in Anvil Guard over the past years is that the high political characters are being murdered, basically. And no one knows who or why it's happening. Although, I say no one. Most people kind of assume that it's the Black Scale Coil, that they have something to do with this. Because the people who are getting murdered are people who have either outwardly denounced them or didn't, you know, fit their particular motif, aka elf, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they've taken out all those characters, and the city's kind of like, people are getting scared because they're like, well, wait a minute, if somebody who is like the high arbiter gets assassinated underneath an army of personal guards deep within his fortress, What luck do I have? Like, what am I going to do? I'm just a guy that sits on the docks throwing a net out and catching horrible fish. So, and even Sigmar's people, they're like the devout, the Order of Azir, which is not just Stormcast, but like witchfinders and humans and priests of Sigmar and that kind of stuff. They can't really find anything. They get rumors, they get bits of, you know, notes and information, but they have no idea who is in charge of this coil. It's a being known only as the Sovereign. And if you can't figure out at this point in the story who is behind a bunch of Dark Elf assassinations in this book, which is titled Broken Realms Marathi, just wait. We'll tell you. It's Marathi.
No spoilers here. None.
No spoilers, but it's Marathi. And she's
Marathi, yeah.
Yeah, she's doing stuff. So she sets up this whole thing, which this has been a part of Anvil Guard lore for since I think the setting was introduced. So either somebody at Games Workshop has been planning this for a really long time, which if so, bravo. I love the amount of deep seeding that would have to take. Or somebody wrote the black scale coil thing and left it open-ended. They were like, yeah, it's a shadowy figure. And then this book started getting in production, and they were like, oh, well, shoot. Let's,
make him a Marathi!
Yeah, that seems to work out really well.
It's perfect.
So, yeah, there are other named, quote-unquote, characters in this organization. Most specifically, the sorceress Drusa Kraith, who is a dark elf sorceress, which they are just the worst people. Generally, they use mind control magic to dominate and enslave people to do their bidding in such subtle ways that you don't even realize you're doing their bidding until you're dead somewhere. They have, no one knows how many people are in this cabal. And that's kind of the setup we get right there, is something's going on in Anvil Guard. There's less Stormcast than before. The town guard are like, basically powerless to figure out what the heck is going on.
And then Lord Veritan Kaiser von Brecht returns!
He shows up! Yeah, this guy, it says, I like this, it's not the first time he had died, and it certainly will not be the last.
Nope.
Not very optimistic for our, probably, I don't know, if you took Marathi out of this, I'd say he's the main character of this book.
He does seem to be the guy who a lot of things are happening to.
Yeah,
he's kind of the guy that's off to the like to the side ground, and he's like, wait, why does this keep happening to me? I keep winding up in the worst part of this story.
He does. I did kind of get that Bruce Willis Die Hard sense a little bit, where it's like he just was showing up for vacation, and now mm-hmm. this happened. Like obviously he's a pretty hardened killer and hunter of evil things. But it does kind of feel like he's like, well, this is way bigger than me. I should not be the one taking lead on any of this. But he's been remade. He's been smashed back together. And then he was immediately dispatched to the Black Nexus, which is the one that's in Anvil Guard. And he's a little sad because he, wasn't able to do much in the fight. And he died because he fell, which I gotta imagine is pretty, sad for a Stormcast. But he's like, all right. I guess I'll start solving some murders. And he is very good at this. This is what Von Brecht does. Like, he smashed down doors of notorious criminals, drag them from their beds, take them from the street in full view. Like, they basically throw all subtlety to the side and go, oh yeah, we're immortal 10-foot-tall lightning golems. Why are we playing politics with criminals? Let's just beat them up. And I like that. I like just the pure Sigmar doing things Sigmar way, no subtlety, no deception. Like, we know you're a criminal, you can either tell us about the other criminals or not, but either way, you're getting a hammer to the face. Most of them they took were pretty bad. Most, it says that some of them were just petty criminals who really didn't have anything interesting to say. More of them were merchant lords, Freegold officers, people who had shown signs of mental domination. And as he started to unveil all the enchantments, he was like, Lord Von Brecht is like, well, wait a minute, this is not good, because as he, unworks the magic on them, they die. Like, they just fall over and have a seizure, and their blood turns to black acid. So he gets the idea that he is dealing with something a little more than, like, a bunch of guys that got together to start a Nurgle club.
A bit more above his pay grade.
Yeah, yeah, but I love him because he's like, oh, okay, this is bizarre, but I'm going to keep doing my job. But then, mm-hmm. as he's plotting it, someone knocks on the door of Anvil Guard, and it's Marathi, and she's got a bunch of Kainites with her, and that's not a great sign for anybody. I guess that there's people in the city who are happy, but, honestly, at that point, do they even know that Marathi is on their side? Like, or are they just like, uh-oh, we might also get murdered because Marathi's just going to do what Marathi does. They all get summoned into the Dauntless Hall. They have a big conclave meeting. It's kind of interesting how they go into saying they entered by the Bleakscale docks. And it's like, okay, I guess I don't know where that is, but neat. I assume it's docks.
Cool. I'm glad you named this, I guess.
Yeah. And then they took a noticeably wrong route to the city's capital. Like, she basically paraded around so that everyone could see her, which I imagine if you're waiting for a bunch of sleeper agents and spies and stuff, you want to make sure everyone knows it's time to go.
Well, and she'd just taken a bath. in, you know, Slanesh's belly, so.
Yeah. Yeah, she got her and nails did. She's looking fine. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, girl, you looking just like murder. Literally.
Literally murder. You're actually covered in blood. I'm concerned.
Yeah, you appear to have, you smell a lot like death and also excess. Yeah, it's a weird look for you.
Weird combination. But basically, she kind of steps in and she's like, hey, I heard you had some problems with an Anvil Guard. I'm here to help.
Yeah, I know.
Which isn't a lie.
I mean, technically, she does fix the problem of the covert assassinations.
Right.
You know.
And goes to open assassinations. It's fine.
Yeah. That is my favorite part of this whole book, is that little paragraph at the bottom of 56, where Van Brecht, everyone is like, oh, good, you're here. Oh, thank you, Marathi. We're so glad you're here. And he just goes, hey, how the hell did you get here? Why are you not with the rest of the people? Where is Anvil Guard? What is going on? This is suspicious. And I like that because, you know, she's essentially a goddess. She's standing in front of an army. And this one Stormcast guy is like, hold up. Doesn't check out for me.
I was with you, sir.
Yeah,
ma'am.
He's clearly got a lot of huevos to be saying that. And I appreciated that he's stood up to it. Of course, I guess once again, if you know you die, you come back, you're got a little more, you know, gusto. But she says, like, oh, it was successful. We had fled, and then we had we dispatched word to Azir. So reinforcements were already on their way to relieve the survivors, which, you know, it's like, well, I don't think that's probably very true, honestly. And then she asks, she straight out calls him up. She dresses him down. And she asks him about any trauma he suffered during the reforging, which is the most super taboo thing you can do to a Stormcast. So, you know, if this story for Van Brecht doesn't end with him taking just a hammer to the side of her head at least once, I'll be a little disappointed. Like, she strode into his house, she spit on his dog, she knocked over his couch, and then she basically called him out. Like, I imagine he's going to get some retribution, I hope. But yeah, so she does a very good job of being like, well, you might not be okay. Are you okay? Are you feeling good? Maybe you've got the problem. You know, the classic strategy of a conqueror to basically turn any questions on them against the person asking the questions.
It's an effective tactic, I'm not going to lie. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Marathi didn't get here without proper planning and preparation.
I do also like that at the very end of that little story, he reminds everyone that his mandate has no limits when it came to acts of sedition or heresy. Basically saying to Marathi, hey, listen, if I gotta kill a snake god, I am legally within my rights to kill you.
Yeah, I have jurisdiction here.
Anvil Guard is Florida, and I am standing on my ground, young lady, so how do you want to play this? And, yeah, so she basically is like, you know, we're here to save you all. And then he has to basically welcome him in because what else, you know, he's one guy by himself. And then it gets substantially worse. So we go into the terror in the mist. What happens here is there's mist and it's terrifying. This is when it all hits every fan. Basically a horrifying, weird aberration of a mist rolls into town. Everybody that lives in the city is like, well, it's normally pretty foggy. This is a lot more foggy. And they can hear the sounds of battle. But they can't, nobody can tell where anything is. Like, these companies of Free Gold Guard are trying to, you know, form up and push into the mist, but they can see a foot in front of themselves, and the sounds of battle are kind of everywhere but nowhere. So even the ones who are, like, the battle-hardened Charind Rangers, who are, like, the elite guys, they can't find what's going on. And as soon as they do find basically anything, they just get destroyed by these Dark Elf archers, crossbowmen. They don't do particularly well because this is a super duper sneak attack. And even though Anvil Guard is a city full of just tough as nails people, they can't do much when they can't even see what's attacking them. And they are pretty much slaughtered left and right. Like, there's little bits in the story about them doing a pretty decent job. But, and mostly the Charwind guys, the super elites, the Marines, basically. But except for them, you don't get the idea that many people do very well during this. It's basically just wholesale slaughter in the streets. as all the people are removed. And then at the Black Nexus, the Anvils, all like 12 of them at this point that are still there, are getting together, you know, going to go back into the city, going to try to save everyone. It says that rumors had already reached them about this kind of stuff, so they had waited too long to act, and now they had to basically get in there and do everything they could. But they also didn't want to declare war against Marathi because they hadn't found out that it was specifically her yet, which it's interesting because, I mean, I don't know how much more proof you need. She's from the Realm of Shadows. She shows up with an army, and now a bunch of people are dying and there's shadowy fog everywhere. Like, would be a heck of a coinkydink.
Circumstantial, sir. Entirely circumstantial.
You can't prove anything. What happens is there's another guy there too, Van Helm, who I think is a Lord Castellan? Yeah, Lord Castellan. He tells Van Brecht, he's like, hey, we can't declare a war. Also can't just march on the Kainites because we don't have any people here to guard the city. So for some reason, somebody took all of them and they haven't come back yet. Huh? So he's like, hey, Van Brecht, you got to find out if this is her doing this. And if so, you have to take the news back. Like, you have to be the one to do this. And Van Breck's like, you know, my job is hunting vampires, guys, and I have done zero vampire hunting this entire book. Like, they specifically went out of their way to tell us his job is hunting vampires, and then he does zero of that. He takes a little group with him. It's not called the Precipice of Ruin, is it? No, Tunnels of Death.
Tunnels of Death, yeah.
Is that it?
Sorry.
I don't know. The names all sound the same. So he takes his group, and their whole goal is, like, we're going to escape the city underground tunnel style because they can't stand and fight, and they're not particularly great at this urban warfare against ninja assassin ladies. So they're going to just head out, and they go into the Tunnels of Death. And they've also got some other people with them. Like, they get a Warden King, a dwarf guy, and he brings a bunch of Dorden long beards. They've got cogsmiths. They've got a bunch of Free Guild Guard. So, like, even Flagellans, like, it's a kind of a cool coalition of people who get down in here to these basically tunnels and catacombs. And they have a whole plan, which is to go take over the Cog Fort, which is a giant mechanical walking fortress with cannons on it. It's a big Howl's Moving Castle with guns, I think. It's the easiest way to describe it. So their plan is, like, we know it's probably out there. Old Fire Snout is the one they're going for, which is, I think, the oldest Cog Fort. It's even rumored to have its own kind of sentience to it, which is not good. When machines in the Warhammer universe start to gain sentience, that's usually a Khorne thing, and that's never good when your gun suddenly starts wanting to kill more. But that doesn't come into a place here, because they figure probably it's been captured, but they figure the Dark Elves, they don't know how to run it, most likely. And if they can just get to it, they can use it. So that's their plan. You get this cool little mission where they're like, we got to go through these tunnels, we got to deal with all this stuff down there, and then we got to get this Cog Fort and rescue it. Like a little side quest, kind of. Pretty neat little story. They go through the tunnels. They don't successfully get everyone through the tunnels because it's full of Hydras and Charybdises. Which also, props to Games Workshop for putting the plural version of Charybdis finally in print. So I know if it's Charybdi or Charybdises. According to Games Workshop, you heard it here, it's Charybdises. So you have to say it like that. But yeah, they fight a bunch of those things where once again, Scourge privateers, man, kind of cool stuff, bring all their monsters down to hunt them out, the Beastmasters. By the time they finally get out of this underground slog of monster killing, they basically have a little dungeon crawl of Dungeons and Dragons to get through first. And when they finally get through, the Warden King takes his little group back with him to try to go get the Cog Fort. And then you've got the Stormcast and the remaining humans. They enter the Black Nexus, which is the Stormkeep. Basically, they're like, this is going to have to be our final stand. Like, we don't have anywhere else to go. This is it. Let's do this. Now we get a really cool full-page picture of all of these models available for purchase now from your local Games Workshop or Gigabytes Cafe store. So you can reenact this story. You only have to buy seven armies, I think, is what it says
seven
later
armies.
On.
They got a mortgage on your house.
You know, and it's statistically, I should have had most of this, but yet these are mostly armies I don't have. So I was like, well, I can really do one battle plan and a third of the other one, and then, yeah. We'll have to reskin them a little bit. But side note, I like this picture because I like their anvils paint jobs they've done on these anvils here with the gold and black. It just looks good. And I like that they have included some of the kitbashed ones they've used with like the human heads or the guys that have the skulls on their helmets. It's kind of neat. I like when they sneak in the little kitbashy stuff into these big model pictures. Gives you something to look at. I also like, just as a complete side note, trying to look at the scenery and figuring out, like, okay, well, that's from an Azerite ruins. That's from a realm gate. Like, the scenery people, I know we've said it before on this show, they are really good at their job over there. Like, this...
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys... I mean, I know I'm nerding out on the scenery a little bit, but, like, just the amount of kit bashing and stuff they would have to do to make this stuff look this cool. And you can tell what it is. Like, I have some of this stuff, so I know I'm looking at the back of a realm gate or something. So, yeah, that's basically what happens. They make their last stand. Then we go, there's the last two pages, essentially, of the story. We're wrapping it up here, guys. And then we'll get to some rules, some delicious rules. So, Van Brecht, Black Nexus, yeah, it's more of a simple fort, more than a simple fort, sorry. But, of course, it's pretty empty at this point. So they form up as best they can, and they are attacked. What's been going on in Anvil Guard this whole time is the scouts and all of those stuff, the assassins. You know, if you're just a fisherman who follows Sigmar, you're probably not going to do very well against a Cainite murder goddess, really, in a fight. That's been pretty rough for most of them. But when they all show up and they're like, okay, now we're going to take this final place, they realize that Stormcast are just a different breed entirely. And Judicators, which are the bow guys, light up the sky in lightning bolt arrows and basically just demolish these dark elves that had showed up under mind control to fight. And it even says they focused their shots on the enemy leader. So they ignored Lookout Sir and got in enough shots to bring down the sorceresses, because when you do that, the army doesn't focus as one anymore, which is smart. I like that. The Stormcast know they can't win sheer force, so they start using tactics. Pretty good stuff. They form a circle. It's a pretty standard Stormcast battle, you know, circle up, get that plus one to save, reroll saves of one, just stand there, just hope you outlast the person. And Caerith is there, the sorceress lady, and does she die? I can't remember if she dies or just gets beat up. I know that she's doing she hasn't won, but it's that moment in the movie where you're like, uh-oh, they might not live. And then over the hill comes Old Fire Snout, because the Doradin got it to work, which is a great, you know, deus ex machina. It's literally a machine god. It works perfectly. And so they show up and start just blasting everybody with cannons, blasting scores of elven warriors to bloody mist. Like, that's a pretty good mental image there. Because these things were meant to defend the city against, like, hey, there's 14 bloodthirsters coming over that hill. They are definitely not supposed to be aimed at original Warhammer Fantasy models with a 5-up save. So they just destroys everything. And I was happy to see this. Packs of Scourge Corsairs, handgunners, everybody. So not all of the elves of Anvil Guard had abandoned their oath to Sigmar. Some of them were like, no, we're not doing this. This is too bad. And I'm sure some of them were like, well, I bet Sigmar wins this one in the end. I might as well throw him with the guy that tends to win, even if it's really prolonged. He still tends to come out on top. So, yeah, and the Anvils, they get a cool moment, you know, where all the Anvils are like, they're proud, they're stirred the hearts as they see all of these reinforcements show up, and once more their sonorous voices echoed above the thunder of muskets and the clash of blades. So yeah, they basically just whoop these guys pretty bad. Van Brecht notices that the sorceress is having a hard time. The dragon tries to get away. She basically goes to escape, and then the dragon tries to get away. Van Brecht opens his lantern, which in a second I'm going to rant about these lanterns in books and these lanterns on the table. This is the biggest division of rules I have ever seen in my life in this game. But the lantern sears out her eyes, and then she falls off of her dragon while it is getting shot by a dozen arrows. Oh yeah, this is what happened. He goes up to kill her, but he doesn't kill her. He's just blinded her. Because guess who shows up to be a jerk? There's been one answer to that question this whole book. Do you guys know what it is?
Spoiler, it's Marathi.
It's Marathi! It's specifically Snake Marathi. And Van Vrecht is like, Marathi, why did it have to be Marathi? And then she shows up and destroys the Cog Fort, pretty much. Which, you know, it's kind of sad. R.I.P. old Fire Snout. He did his job. Yeah. But she kills all the crew, so it's like, it's not coming back. And she's, you know, or I say she. I don't, the Shadow Queen is written as a different character, but it's essentially her. I mean, did you guys get that too? Like, does that, am I just interpreting this wrong? Is it a whole different thing?
I don't know. I mean, you do have a point. It is kind of written differently, but...
Yeah, because they mentioned that, like, it's basically around her. And we know in terms of the game, it's when one dies, the other one dies. It's kind of the same character for rules purposes. But I don't know if it has its own thoughts or if it's just like, you know, that's her warlock summon and wow, like it just does stuff for her.
Oh, yeah. I always assumed they were kind of like two separate but joined entities.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe like they share the same thoughts somehow. Who knows? It's magic. We're talking about whether or not a split in half goddess snake lady has full consciousness. So we might just have to say, it's magic. So yeah, they, unfortunately at this point, the anvils are like, ah, crap. And guess what they're using on them once again? So they can't lightning bolt. Poison.
Poison.
Yeah. And it's terrible because now the Stormcast are basically just laying there, not able to do anything. And we get a great, another Van Vrecht moment. He gets hit with it and he starts getting poisoned. And I like that it says his vision blurred and his head swam as if he had been punched by a gargant, which in my canon is the only way this character knows that is because one time he had been punched by a gargant and lived. And so, and he's like, oh, that feels familiar. Yeah. But yeah, his last kind of vision is to see, you know, everything going bad. All of the Longbeards are dead. Things are not good. Marathi shows up and, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. High Oracle of Cain shows up. So that's the Marathi version, not the snaky version, right? Yeah. And right. She shows, yeah, God, this is a little confusing. So she shows up, she basically sees him laying there or trying not to succumb to the poison. And then she's all like, she starts to monologue because she's a villain. She's, I'm going to give my theory on why she's actually the worst villain in this entire setting, but we'll get back to that. And during her monologue, Van Vrecht does what every hero should do during a monologue, which is try to hit her in the face with the hilt of his blade or with his, like, yeah. he just goes after her. He's like, nah, he's like, death was a gift and I'm not afraid of it, which is, that's a cool line, you know, go action guy line to say, death was a gift, he told the sorceress, and held no fear from him. Did she feel the same, he wondered? Like, you can imagine that being delivered in the rain, and he's got, like, slowly blurry vision. I like that. You know what? If you can't figure out how to write Stormcast, just make them action heroes. And it kind of works for them a little bit. Because they should be. They're the best at everything. They're all Schwarzeneggers. So, yeah, he doesn't kill her. But it says that it took even her by surprise. Like, she's did not expect him to be that full of life still. But she does parry the blow. And then the Shadow Queen comes down, smashes him, and knocks him unconscious. Well, that and the poison. So, he's
imagine
gone.
Imagine what a real god's if a dude took her by surprise.
See, that's, once again, that feeds into my theory. I don't think she's full deity, or if she is, she doesn't know how to do it the right way. Because
maybe she's a lowercase god.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is like she's like Archaon, who technically, if you got a lucky shot in on him, you could hurt him. You know, you're just not going to, but you could. It's possible. Whereas if you stab Sigmar, he's just going to look at you and be like, "What did you do that for? I'm immortal. Ow, I've been stabbed." And then he would throw his hammer at you and miss, and spend 1,000 years sulking about it. So yeah, and then the last thing in the book. Well, okay, so there's two things. I keep ignoring this final story by Slaanesh because it's not my thing. But this is the story on the boat, which I love this. How did you guys feel about this? The story of Van Brecht and his escape? Question mark.
I loved it.
Josh hated it, apparently.
I didn't hate it. I just found it odd. Like, how? Like, why?
Well, we know
he was defeated. Why was he not just like imprisoned, like instantly? Like, this part didn't. For all the smart things that Marathi has done to Stormcast in the previous story, the fact that Mr. Van Brecht just gets away, I don't know. It didn't strike for me the way that I think it should have.
Yeah. Well, so so she sold him, basically. Like, she sold him to this Scourge privateer. Once again, yay! Although not in this capacity, not really. Yay for torture, but, you know, yay for shoutouts. And then, that should be just the title of this episode. Yay for torture!
Yay for torture.
Yay for torture. But yeah, so she essentially sells him. My guess is that some of the Scourge privateers are pretty awful, awful people. And probably she realized this guy, I don't know, maybe it was just ego. Because he took a shot at her, and he insulted her in front of everybody, and he called her out. Maybe she's just like, I'm not going to put you in a pen, I'm going to sell you off to be tortured. Which is pretty risky, because you got to tell the people that you sell them to, like, hey, do not kill this guy. Don't let him fall down some stairs. Don't give him a rope. Like, trust me, he'll die, and then he'll bring the literal thunder of a god back on your house. So, keep him alive. But yeah, so he's basically hanging there, you know, de-armored, waiting to be killed. He's undergoing water torture, which is pretty horrifying to think that that exists over here too. And also that's just the most horrifying thing they can do in a world of magic flying dragons is just drip water on your head. And it still drives you crazy. But yeah, we get another cool action line. You know, the venom can paralyze a rhinox with a few drops. The fact that you are struggling at all is impressive. Once again, just great 80s movie dialogue, you know? I love that stuff. And then he's all like, you should kill me now, which is super smart. I think that Stormcast should open with that option a lot more, because it tends to be an okay way to solve the problem. But then something horrible happens, and the guy, like, they hear something outside, and the Corsair is like, I'm gonna go check on this. And he goes outside, and then another elf stumbled into the cell and is dead. And the Corsair's like, okay. Something grabs him and pulls him out. And it says we get the briefest impression of a gleaming blood-slit claw. And he's yanked out of the room, some screaming, a little wet tearing for the people at home, and in silence. And then he's set free. For some reason, I guess we forgot to say he's not held by like ropes. He's held by tendrils, like a creature is holding him.
Yeah.
So something kills that creature, and he stumbles free. He grabs a knife. He's all like, "All right, time to go." This is Bruce Willis with no shoes walking across the glass. You know, he's got one shot left, kind of thing. And he gets ready to just start kicking his just way out of here. He kicks open the door, and, like, everyone's dead. It's just, the hallway is just full of gore. Oh, man, the description of the guy that was torturing him, just missing an arm and his lower jaw, while still alive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then, this, I realize, guys, I'm getting kind of a man crush on this character, but I just want to read this paragraph. When he finds this guy who was torturing him, basically with just mutilated, the Lord Veritant waited a moment, long enough for the ruined creature to remember his promise. Then he broke the elf's neck. When he promised that he was going to kill him. That's such a great, remember when I told you I'd kill you last line moment? It's like, he lets him live just long enough to remember that he said he was going to be the one to kill him. And then he does it.
He did it.
This is why I challenge people when they're like, Stormcast or Goody Two Shoes. It's like, I don't know, man. I think some of them are pretty dark. Ambles especially are like, they get the job done. And then he goes, and everyone's dead. He has no idea what's going on. He gets to the top of the ship, and we see something. And what we see is an impression of bat-like wings unfurling and a sudden rush of air. And he's alone on the dead ship. So,
Flesh Eater Corp.
Yeah, that would be a big surprise. It's a very moderately sized Star Drake. I have theories on this. Well, first off, what do you guys? I want to know what you guys think. What was this shadowy thing?
Flesh Eater Court.
Yeah, I mean that's
he's a vampire hunter. His old family was vampire from the vampires. And when was the last time we got some Flesh Eater Court lore?
Well,
it's time for them to do something.
All those previews are hinting heavily at some sort of death / nautical army. Or something, even if it's just a figure.
Vampires.
I mean, now. Josh, what do you think?
I'm willing to put $100 on it.
Ooh, oh. I mean, we're on the air, sir.
If you're asking me what I think it is, it's probably Feck. If you're asking me what I want it to be, I want it to be Crab People.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess crab people might also be the vampires. Maybe they have giant bugs, who knows. So I should tell you guys, most of the internet disagrees with it. First off, I'm on Team Vampire. I read this, and that's immediately, I was like, oh, I think that's what's going to happen. Because you're right, David, that's his storyline. It ties his storyline together.
I mean, it really screams Flesh Eater Courts, and they get a new wing demon.
Well, I mean, some vampire models have wings. And can turn into shadows.
Who's Flesh Eater Courts? And when was the last time they got in their book? That's about it.
Yeah, they got a little love in the underworld stuff, I think. But they don't, I mean, their story doesn't really move forward because they're kind of just stuck, you know? They don't. I think Flesh Eater Courts suffers from not having a main character that anyone cares about. Like, and then once again, how do you write that? Like, how do you make that main character? You could do it, but it would almost be kind of comical because they'd have to constantly be like, you know, oh, fair lady and sir, I shall free you. But then in reality, they're just blah, 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 and they're just vomiting blood on people. So it's almost a little too funny. I get why it's been hard to make a main character. But then again, classic Soulblight vampires can turn into bats and also have big wings and are shadowy. So, I mean, it could just be one of them. But you guys want to hear something funny? What? No one agrees with us on the internet. I started scouring for more information on this because I was kind of curious. Most people think that, okay, so Malarian, let's back this up. Malarian is a god of shadow, kind of, in the realm of shadow, and he is Marathi's son. And he has never gotten along with Marathi. And so most people think that this was either him or one of his agents. Because it's, you know, described as, like, shadowy and that kind of stuff. And I think in some other book there was a mention of shadow demons. It might have been the Wrath one, if I'm trying to remember where I saw it. So, like, people are saying, oh, it's Malarian. It's going to be his dark elf shadow army. And they're going to, you know, he doesn't want his mom to gain full power because he knows how terrible she is. Which, I get that, and it makes sense narratively, but it doesn't make sense that he would free a single Stormcast Eternal.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and also, why just free him? If your whole goal is, I gotta let Sigmar know, just go ahead and kill him right there. I mean, you're literally doing him a favor. What you've done is you've left him on a boat in the middle of nowhere. And if we are...
Yeah. I don't think it's very open. I think it's going to be some vampire things. It ties in together with the character. I hope I'm remembering this character. He's the vampire.
Yeah, that's Van Brecht. Yeah, because narratively that makes sense. You got him and his whole storyline to take out his relatives, and, you know, maybe they're watching him, and maybe this is going to be like, that's how they introduce the vampire pirates. Because they're like, hey, we know what's going on. We're making ourselves known at this point, and we don't like Marathi either. How would you say for a team up? Remember me? I'm your brother, but now I'm a vampire. I mean, if they're going to write this guy like kind of a cheesy 80s action movie adventure thing, having his brother or sister or someone be evil, or his wife or husband, or, you know, somebody that's connected to him, that's pretty obvious. That's script writing 101. And I feel like, as much as I love these books, they're not particularly, like, complex.
Yeah. I mean, and we all like a good M. Night Shyamalan, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that also gives him a good character growth, too, because if he is helped by the people he's basically sworn to hunt down and kill, and it turns out that while they are Soul Blight, they only did it to avoid being eaten by Korn, and they're not evil, quote-unquote, even though it says they serve as, like, warlords. Maybe they're like, yeah, I'm a warlord of a bunch of skeletons. They don't care, you know? So, who knows? That would be kind of cool. I hope that we get more about him in the story. I hope he's not just kind of shoved to the side as things get bigger.
Hopefully he's just a reoccurring thing in this little saga.
I hope he's in every book, and in every book he dies like twice, and he just gets more and more curmudgeonly when he comes back. Eventually he comes back to life and just like slaps Sigmar in the face and then walks down the stairs, just grabs a gun off the rack, and he's like, Sigmar's like, you're off the force, and he's like, whatever, I don't need this badge, and then he just goes and kills Marathi. That's what I hope. But I have a feeling things are going to get a lot bigger, because we're on the last lore thing here. Got to talk about this newborn a little bit. Happy birthday to it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Well, I'll tell you what it does. Wherever it passed, it turned stone to quivering flesh, birthed lakes of honeyed saliva, and plowed valleys of pristine glass. What? So this thing... Zeech is looking at this thing going, I'm sorry, what? I don't understand. Caw? Caw? Like, it is just warping and twisting reality as it goes around. And finally, it just finds a big place to rest, essentially. It says a cradle, fitting cradle, echoing to the agonizing wails of long-dead souls. And there it sits. And as it sits, thousands of Slaanesh warriors come to see it. And the hollow crawls with withering, swaying worshippers, lost in rapturous delirium. They're having the greatest baby shower in existence. Like, let me tell you, it's fantastic. Martha brought that Fresca lime. Oh, it's so good. And we're going to do, they said, you know, Karen's husband Bill is going to do a cookout for us later. And he's got these steaks. They're lean steaks, but they're delicious. So it's going to be the greatest baby shower.
I heard the wildest gender reveal party I've ever seen.
I heard the gender reveal, they're doing fireworks.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to go badly. But anyway, yeah, so the end of this story, the newborn begins to speak. And we don't know what else happens after that, because that's where the book stops.
Well, it's a newborn. Obviously, it just said, like, goo goo gaga or something.
But... yeah, it just, he called out mama. I'm just excited that finally there's a new contender for cutest baby that isn't Baby Yoda. Better watch out.
I was thinking the same thing.
Slaanesh baby coming for your Christmas toys. Get that Slaanesh baby in a little bag and carry around. Oh man, terrible stuff. Okay, yeah, comes with its free pouch of quivering flesh. And that sounds like a good time to hear from our last commercial and then blow through some rules. You guys want to do that?
Let's do it.
To the commercial vehicle.
Listen, folks, nobody wants to play a tabletop game against a horde of gray, unpainted plastic, and you certainly don't want to be the one bringing that to the game shop week after week. That's why we, at Atlanta Warhammer, trust Llama Juice Painting for commissioned works of miniature art. When there's something we can't get to, or we just want that extra special touch, Llama Juice Painting is our go-to for high-quality custom work. Check them out on AtlantaWarhammer.com or on Facebook.com/LlamaJuicePainting to get your quote today.
And we are back. We're done with that story.
Hey, if you have skipped all of the story part, you're at the good part now. We're at the rules bit.
If you've skipped most of the episode, welcome to the last 20 minutes of the episode.
20 minutes, man. We're going to breeze through this in 15. It's a 15-minute episode if you skip the story part.
Which is, yeah, that's true. Well, listen, they don't come to us for rules. I don't even know why they come to us, but it's probably not for this part. But here it is anyway. So... stuff that happens. Let's play through this. There's a campaign in here. It seems really cool. Like, I would love to play this campaign, but you have to have, in order to play it as it is written, you have to field very specific armies, and in some cases, two or more of those armies at the same time. So it doesn't... while it seems like it would be a lot of fun to do this, I think we'd have to switch some names around, bring in different armies. But the battle plan should work. fairly well. Like, if you know, you're taking over a city, just pretend it's a different city. Pretend it's a different Valley of Ash and Blood. Pretend it's a different Hag's Anal Bay. Like, whatever you want to do. Make it your game. Because it even tells you there, if you don't have any, if you don't have all the armies, just substitute suitable units for you have. So, yeah. And then we get a realm of battle for Olgu, but specifically the Heliflux, and Akshi, specifically the Charwind Coast, which, I mean, if you're taking a realm for your army, which I think 99% of people don't at this point, there is some stuff in an artifact you can take. Realm feature if you're playing in there. There is one for the 8 points for the Maw, which is kind of cool as well. Especially, I guess, if you get, you know, all the stuff from Warcry and you want to kind of recreate parts of that. But yeah, that's really it. I mean, everybody take a look at the stuff. They're neat. I like the Undertunnels one because it's very weird. It's just like, it doesn't look like it plays like an Age of Sigmar game. That's the one where you're controlling Hydras and Charybdis and trying to kill Van Brecht. So that one looks kind of cool. The Fall of Amblegard one also looks cool because it's just everybody versus everybody. But that's it for the campaign stuff, which I always feel like is kind of just glossed over on most of these books. Even though this book is literally a campaign book, I don't know if many people... Shoot, I don't know of anyone that's ever done one to completion. Like, the whole thing. I played part of Malign Portents, got like 2 plans in. Anyway. Yeah, if you've played...
It's the difficulty of if you don't have friends that have a wide variety of armies and then also very specific models within those armies, it's kind of hard to play the campaign book as it's written and intended.
Yeah, so if you're out there and you've played through these campaigns, let us know. Like, I'm genuinely interested if they are fun or if it's just easier to just play random games and kind of make your own story. You know, tell us. Right. I'm curious. And then we get to the Battle Tome updates.
Yeah, we got 4 big ones.
4 big ones. First one is the Daughters of Cain. You might have heard of them in this book.
They are rather important.
They play a
particular book goes.
I would say they are a catalyst of many events, and I would also say I do not know much about this army at all. I have played it. I played it in tournaments. Against it, I should say. And one time I killed Marathi with a Griffhound because she was on 1 HP, and the player didn't see the Griffhound running around the table because I'd lost the battle so horribly at that point. I was just doing dumb stuff to do dumb stuff. And that's all I know about the Daughters of Cain. So there's new stuff. Check it out.
You get the new little, I don't know what they're called, the new temple.
Yeah.
Just write it, temple. You get 3 new battalions. One gives, no battle shocks. The other one can use command ability without command point. The other one's something about the blood rack shrines.
Yeah, it does healing. So yeah. It's a healing thing. It's cool. And it gives you some battalions that include specifically Marathi and the snake people and harpies. So that's kind of neat if you want to have a really themed looking army.
Yeah.
Biggest
change is to Marath, though.
Yeah, because now you get both for the price of one.
Yeah. She's definitely gotten a little more killy from looking at her past war scrolls. Where is it? The Gaze of the Shadow Queen is actually good now. All of her other things kind of got a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing is she doesn't transform anymore. You just put both models on the table.
Yeah. Yeah, they are, when they're set up, you set them both up, and basically they're not the same model. Like, they can move around. I don't think they have to be, like, next to each other or anything. But when little Marathi takes damage, it automatically goes on to big Marathi. And big Marathi can only take 3 wounds a turn. So we had a rousing debate before the show where I forgot the difference between turns and phases. But Josh, thankfully, is much better at that than me. Josh, you figured out how the soonest you can kill her is...
Bottom of round 2.
Yeah.
She can only take 3 wounds a turn. And so each player gets a turn, so... You know, in a 6 wounds in a round, essentially. And since she has 12 wounds, it's bottom of turn 2.
Yeah, and that's assuming...
Or bottom of round 2, sorry.
That's assuming you got something that can put damage on her a lot, both in your turn and your opponent's turn. Which,
right.
You know, I think probably it'll be one of those, like, well, just kind of ignore it or block it out kind of things.
Yeah, there's going to be... I'm going to be very interested to see if Marathi Cain and... the Shadow Queen, which is the other part of her, wind up in some tournament lists because she is still incredibly expensive. 600 points for both models to pop on the table together, and they have to pop on the table together. So
yeah, and while they are very good, I think they're exceptionally killy. They're still only two models, and they can be, you know, stick them in a pack of 30 plague bearers and just let them sit there for four turns, like, right. And they won't do anything really. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about the army to know. The only thing I noticed on this that I thought was kind of interesting that it says under Marathi Kane, and then we'll go to the next stuff, was that if it's included in a Daughters of Kane army, the model is treated as a general in addition to the model that is chosen to be the general. So she can use anything that says command abilities, your general, for free, which is maybe
right.
Kind of hidden in there a little bit, but that's probably a pretty good boost as well, because you get two generals, which, you know, could be pretty useful when you need command abilities.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you like snakes, Marathi, you know more than us what that means.
if anyone out there plays the Daughters of Kane arm, let us know what this update to Marathi Kane looks like for you, and if you're planning on using it.
Yeah, is this good?
Because we won't.
Bad? Is it in the middle? I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know, though.
You know some cities.
I know some cities. So, new rule for cities. You can still play Anvil Guard. That's fine. You can just pretend that it takes place in any other time. We were chatting. My lore for my characters is that they were sent to find a storm vault with my Stormcast, and that's why they would never ally with Marathi. But they are still Anvil Guard. So yeah, that's cool. Obviously, they weren't just going to take an entire faction out of the game. People were worried. I was a little worried, but I was like, oh, that'd be really dumb. But you gain access to two new cities. Well, one new and one rebranded city. You get Misthaven and Har-Kuron, which is the new Anvil Guard. Which is a terrible name. Can you guys tell I'm not a fan of Marathi and what she did to Anvil Guard?
Just a little bit. You seem a little bitter.
I'm taking it personally, man. So yeah, War Squirrel Battalion on here for Kraith Shadow Host, which is the Dark Elf lady on the dragon. It's absolute booty. I guess, I don't know. You know what? No, it is booty. I'm taking a hardline stance. This is a dumb battalion. You heard it here first, guys. Someone's going to win, like, a national championship with this thing, and I'm gonna look really dumb. But it's so, you get a Sorceress, a Dread Spears, and a Dark Shards, which are the two worst units that you can build out of the Dark Elves. And all you get is you can add one to their attacks, but subtract one for save rolls of the unit in a turn. Their saves are already fives, so that puts them at sixes. Their attacks are terrible. Like, the spear guys have one attack, I think it's fours and fours, and the archers have two attacks, which are fours and fours. So good luck. Like, you get a significantly worse attack for the trade of your guys are just gonna die immediately as soon as something hits them, and you can only bring one of each unit, so it's not like you can bring your entire army like this, and you know the trick is to get a one drop, like, small battalion that's not very good. So yeah, sorry if everyone, I was hoping that it would be cool because I have a Sorceress on Black Dragon, but now I'm glad that I didn't go out and buy any of those other models. Because they're kind of booty. Okay, Misthaven.
It's like I have nothing to add to that.
No, I'm just, I'm kind of, not grumpy, obviously. I can't get grumpy at Battle Barbies, but I'm a little sad that it's not better, you know?
Yeah.
Or even middling. It's just kind of terrible. But yeah, the actual new city, Misthaven, is the boat thing we talked about earlier. This is kind of cool. I don't think it's going to do well. It has a very weird army thing that I want to talk about real fast. It gains the Stormcast Deep Strike ability. You know, you set them up to the side and then set them up on the table within 9 inches or outside of 9. But here's how it works. Instead of setting up a Order Serpentis, Shadowblade, or Scourge Privateer unit, you can set with up to 10 models on the battlefield, you place it to the side. For every one of those you do, you have to have one unit on the table of Darkling Covens, Free Guild, or Dorden. So, if you just happen to be a person that owns 2,000 points of an army that includes Order Serpentis, Shadowblades, Scourge Privateers, Darkling Covens, Free Guild, and Dorden, or enough of any of those to make up for the other ones, congratulations, you can Deep Strike a unit of 10 models with a 6-up save. I don't understand what the point of that is. Like, you're going to Deep Strike? I think you've both, if not, killed my Scourge Privateers, at least seen them fall down like paper. And that's in a unit of, like, 40. I don't. The Shadow Blades are kind of cool. Like, shout out to a really weird old model. Shadow Blades are assassins, Shadow Warriors, and I think Warlocks on horses. You don't see them because they're not. They're okay. They're not great. Yeah, this is. It's weird. That's a weird ability. And then their whole thing they can do is a hero can have a narcotic, which is kind of like just an extra little bonus thing they get, which is kind of neat. But heroes in any of those factions I just railed off are generally not very good. Like, the best one is, I think Order Serpentis has the Dragon Lord on Black Dragon, which is the alternate of the Sorceress model. So, hey, if you ran out and bought that box and that you realized how booty that battalion is, build the other version of the dragon. You'll get a much better guy out of it if you want to go that direction. I don't understand. Like, it seems like you boost up that one hero, but he's still not going to last. It has the same problem that most Anvil Guard armies have, where if you go really in theme, the heroes are kind of not great. And they certainly should not be up in the front getting in a fight. Like, adding one to hit rolls when you've got two attacks with a sword is not going to really change the game very much. But I like that there's an option here. This is, you know, it's neat. There's nothing in here that really stuck out to me as like, oh, this is why you bring the army. Like, you set up the guys, and I guess you can set them up and then roll. You can move them up to D6 after you set them up with a command ability, which is it's okay, I guess. I mean, you can guarantee a charge, but once again, you're guaranteeing a charge with 10 crappy pirates. I don't know what... You might take down a sorceress. I don't know. Maybe a lone branch wraith that got caught out or something. But yeah, that's Misthaven. And then Har-Kuron, a.k.a. Anvil Guard, is the last one. Which this one basically just says you can only bring elves, and you can also, instead of the old trick where you get one out of every four units can be a Stormcast, now it can be a Daughters of Cain. So literally that same kind of rule. And they get some command abilities, which are kind of cool. They get access to some of the spells from Anvil Guard. I think, I don't know if these are all of them or like half and half, but they do get the one that says remove basically the save characteristic of an enemy unit, like turn it into dash, which is super good. And maybe having access to Daughters, they have a really good way to cast spells. Once again, I don't know. But the biggest downside to that spell is that it goes on an 8, and I can barely roll a 5 to cast spells, so I've never tried to go for that 8. But maybe there's a cool way to get it with all these coven people. Who knows? I think this is cool, but I don't think this would replace a Daughters army. I think this is, once again, kind of like, hey, if you have these figures and you want to try something different, here you go. You know, I can't imagine people are going to run out and buy models to fit this. But with cities, it's always kind of been about, hey, you already have these on your shelf, so here's a new way to use them. Whew, all right, almost there. You guys with me?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm about to tag out to you, Josh, but I got one more thing to go. I'm going to let you finish, but I got one thing to say. Stormcast Eternals got the greatest update of all time in this book. Well, not really. But they get a really cool update. They get to be Stormkeeps now, which what this is you lose the Lightning Strike ability. You no longer get to Deep Strike, but you get a bunch of stuff that is, I think there's some serious sneakiness in here that people are not thinking about. Because we as Stormcast players are so trained to have that Deep Strike be our biggest thing we can do. I think this actually opens up a different way to play them, which is really what I was hoping for. Right on top of just make the freaking Dracolith battle line. Like, seriously, guys, just do it. But they won't. But what you get with this is, you know, you get to have the normal amount of Cities of Sigmar. It's reverse, so now one out of every four Stormkeep guys is a Cities of Sigmar unit, and you treat them as Cities of Sigmar for command abilities and stuff, which I think can be pretty good. Some of the range stuff is actually not terrible in cities, honestly. As if Stormcast needed more shooting, here's a way to play even more Shootcast. Mm-hmm. It also is weirdly centered on Liberators. Like, they add one to Bravery if you're wholly within 12 of any Liberator units. And if Liberators do not move, they add one to hit rolls and one to save rolls, which means you can get that Liberator unit down to a two-up rerolling one pretty easily. And that's... You bring 40 Liberators with a two-up rerolling one save? Shoot, man, you're just gonna... That's it. They're gonna stand there that entire game and not move.
I think there's a really great opportunity here with the... If you're doing the Liberator combo and then bringing whatever the best shooting is... out of cities, and just lining up liberators and then putting shoe people behind them, because then you can take one of the Stormcast heroes and actually buff the city's unit for their shooting attack.
Yep.
And just really pump that up so that you're having like just a really nasty firing line.
Yeah, you run it like old school Free Guild had to run, where it's just you form a line and you let them hit you and you just shoot them and you kind of hope, you know. And that's cool. I like that. That's a good visual image. And I'm working on some lists for the site that are Stormkeep lists as well, because I've got some ideas too. Yeah, you're right. I think that's probably, I don't know if that's the best one because I don't know what the best is, but I think that's probably going to be a good one, is just form up a literal shield wall and protect your shooters.
Because, I mean, City's biggest issue has always been that, like, they have terrible saves, right?
Yeah, if you're not playing Phoenix Guard with their 4-up, then a 4-up, then a 4-up, then, right. Yeah, you don't, they're not great.
So, what's a great way to make sure that they don't have to make saves? Never let them get hit.
Yeah, just park some Liberators in there. The old standby coming back to be useful. I love it.
Yeah.
So they also get 3 battalions. They're okay. The first one's okay, honestly. If you're... Stormcast have a hard time getting more than 1 battalion in a list anyway. They're just expensive, and they don't let you bring the right kind of units half the time. But you can bring a bunch of heroes, get extra command points. That's kind of cool. Actually, it has the potential to get a lot of command points. Like, you could legit get 6 extra command points per turn with this battalion. You'd have to roll a 5-up each time, but it could happen. You know? So, that could be kind of neat. I don't even know what you do with 6... command points.
Use them to buff your units, I guess.
Yeah, I
and
guess.
Also make sure that nobody runs away. Oh, yeah, that's actually, that works out nicely.
Yeah, well, that plus the plus one bravery.
You never have to make a bravery test.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it's mainly for, is like circle around right. The heroes. Yeah, and the garrison one is kind of cool. It's a little up for paladins. They also get the plus one if they don't move, which it's okay. Gives them a 3-up, you know, not terrible. The last one, I think this is the most powerful one. He comes with a Veritant, 1 Griffhounds unit, and 2 Redeemer or Justicars. Stormcast are so weird. Redeemers are Liberators, and Justicars are shooties. Basically, there's several types that shoot, and they count as Justicars. This one lets you, after you set up, you pick up this entire battalion, and then you deep strike it more than 9 inches from an enemy unit, and wholly within 12 of the Veritant. So what you do is you bring 2 Redeemer or Justicar units. If you're feeling just outright ballsy, you bring all shooting. If not, you bring a squad of Liberators and then a huge squad of shooting. You drop it within 9 inches. Most of your range is 24 inches anyway, so you're good. And then if you've made it to where you get the first turn, you bring the Anvils ability. You name your chamber Anvils. So you shoot in the command phase for what's that? A command point, you say? And then every unit that can do so, spend a command point and they shoot. And then when it comes into your shooting phase... you shoot. And then when it comes into your combat phase, you probably want to run them away a little bit. So, or your movement phase, I mean. So I imagine that you would like drop this forward force, shoot them, and then kind of back them up while your other force walked forward. And by the time your enemy got to them, they're behind a wall of Liberators with another wall of Liberators. And then you formed what you were talking about, Josh. You've made that kind of turtle shell defense.
Right.
But I mean, you could bring a full-sized unit of double long strike Raptors. And just hit something with like a million shots at -2 Ren, 2 damage. Just, what was your hero you brought? Sorry. If it ain't Marathi, it's going down. I think that's going to be kind of interesting to see. And then you get the battalions for like the huge one that's 5,000 points that no one can ever bring, so who cares. And you get one for Van Brecht, which is only, it gives you the same ability to drop them in. But the difference is you can use his sanction ability to target, you get to add 1 to hit rolls if you're targeting a vampire. You can sanction chaos or death heroes. It's okay. It's all right. That lantern, by the way, quick 15-second rant. In the books, the lanterns of these guys burn like thousands of chaos worshippers. We saw one of them earlier on in this book blind a sorceress and then, you know, cause her dragon to die. They're so powerful. And on the table, it's like pick a unit within 9 inches. It suffers 1 mortal wound. I don't understand the difference between the books, but anyway, I guess they can't have it be super cool, but it's so weird because in the books, opening a lantern is like a big deal. It's like the spirit bomb of attacks. And in the tabletop, it's like, yeah, you killed a dwarf. Good job.
Pink.
Yeah. You made that ogre kind of uncomfortable. Yeah, but that's it for Stormcast. A lot of stuff in there. I'm going to dive more into it on the website. I want to get an article up because I think there's a lot of possibilities. And I love Stormcast. And I like that they didn't just boost them. They gave them different ways to play, which is kind of cool. But speaking of both boosting and boosting, and then also boosting, Josh, smells fishy in here.
We're in the deep waters now, baby.
We in it.
Oh, man. Okay, so major changes for INF Deepkin. If you're an INF Deepkin player, this book you must acquire. First thing is Mount Trace. We get them for the Deepmares and for freaking Leviathans. Leviathans have Mount Trace now, guys.
Yay! Woo-hoo! Yeah, and good ones, too.
Yeah! The ancient Mount Trace, I think, in particular, is one that I want to point out, because that is, if a weapon used for attack targets this model as a rank characteristic of -1, you change that rank characteristic to nothing. Yep. So, so good. Especially, and we will get to it, I'll just jump ahead, because the Leviathan is beefy. Oh my god, it's so beefy. Nobody ever brought Leviathans. Everybody's going to bring Leviathans now in the Deepkin list. How can you not? It's going to be amazing.
Which is good. It should be. Those are such cool-looking models.
The biggest thing is that this thing is ginormous, right? It's a big model. But its first profile, because it has profiles, it has a 2-up save.
Mm-hmm.
Which stays that way until it gets 8 wounds on it. So until you get it to half health, it is a 2-up save.
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous. Ridiculous.
And you slap the ancient thing on there, so unless you're bringing things with a 2-up rend, which is not that many things, this thing, it's just never going to die. It's just never going to die, and it's just going to cause absolute chaos. I cannot wait.
Yeah, and it's still a defensive boost to everybody, right? Doesn't it still add one to saves? Yeah. And it's got that, you know, jaw attack where it's like, yeah, if it gets you, you're going to take 3 damage.
Or if you're a monster, you take 6.
Yeah, which is horrifying. I like it. I'm really glad they got this. Alopex has got a boost too.
So we'll jump back up then too, and we'll go to the Alopexes. So the Alopexes got a really nice boost. They are, I mean, they're just meaty, but they're just going to hit stuff harder. They barbed hooks and blades is 6 attacks, 3s and 3s, no rend, and then the ferocious bite is 3 attacks, 3s and 3s, -2 rend, 2 damage each.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. The ferocious bite used to be 1 attack, 3s and 3s, -2, 3 damage. So now it's 3 mm-hmm. So it's like, it's less damage, but you're more likely to hit. And the other profiles, the harpoon launcher and blades, also, they just added an extra attack, and then added rend to the harpoon launcher, I think. Yeah, didn't have rend before.
Yeah, I believe so.
How I know this is because I can pull this up on Azir, which is still not updated from like 2 books ago. Azir, good luck getting your dollar back. It's not even worth trying.
Well, yeah, and then the other big thing is that they're bloodthirsty predators too, so they get to add one to their attacks if a unit has any wounds allocated to it that are within 3 inches of them, or if that unit has had any models that were slain. So if it's killed anything, it's going to get to attack more.
Yeah. Well, it,
they're going to be nasty.
Its only thing it used to do was if that same ability, if something had wounds, it could be reroll. You could reroll your charge rolls, which was still good, but I don't have a problem getting within range. They got a 14 inch move. Oh, that's it. He got 2 more inches on his move too.
Oh yeah, he's 14 inches now.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
he's a fast little boy.
The Eidolon's also got updated both the aspect of the storm and aspect of the sea, both even more badass than they already were.
Yeah, they were pretty good to begin with. I know. I don't know enough about them to know what is different. I don't want to just sit here and go through Azir and talk about it, but just at a quick glance, it looks like they also got little tiny boosts just to kind of help them out, you know?
Just across the board, like, very small boosts. If I remember rightly, I think, because the Bloodsurf Hunt Battalion is fine. I mean, you get the Akelian, you take the Akelian King and 1 and 2 Alopex units, and okay, great. It's not bad, it's another battalion to choose from if you need more artifacts and command points and things of that nature. I don't think that's going to be, like, game-changing. But the points updates, I do think, are particularly interesting for the Ineth. Because if the Edelpex has got updated so well, but they only went up 10 points. So they're 110, and they used to be 100.
Yeah. Which, I'm a little mad because my city is a Sigmar army. I had one as an ally, and it was exactly 2,000 points, and now I have 2,010 points. And I'm like, son of a gun!
And then if I remember, I think the Leviathans went up slightly in point value, but I believe the Eidolons went down, if I'm remembering that correctly. So
I'll have to take your word on all that.
Yeah. The important thing is that you're going to bring more, like, high-powered units into Ineth Deacon lists, which I think is going to change a little bit of how people approach Ineth going forward.
It's not just eels anymore all the time, 24/7.
Right. It's now like, hey, you can actually bring Aelopexes. They make sense. You should totally bring a Leviathan because that's going to be a giant thing. And if you wanted to, you could bring two.
Yeah. You could bring six, like in that that one story. Of course, then that's literally throwing your wallet at the table. Just go buy a corn dragon at that point, money bags.
Yeah, well, I think you're maxed out on the number of behemoths you can bring, but yeah.
Not an open play. One day we're going to do an open play game that's just going to be dumb stuff. Just
the biggest things we own.
I brought only monsters. It's a kaiju battle in the middle of the table. That actually sounds kind of fun. I did a quick search. I was going to say the quick search, the Eidolon, the biggest change they got was they have a 5-up shrug now to wounds.
Oh, yes.
Which helps them out a lot. Yeah.
Five up shrug.
Yeah.
So good.
Nice to have.
So good. Did you want to talk about the Idolators at all?
Yeah, let's hit this real fast. As a Slaves to Darkness player, kinda player, I've played it, but I just played as Nurgle, so it's just kind of Nurgle without the good stuff. There's a new thing here you can do with their Damned Legions. You can be an Idolator. Biggest thing of this, it's weird, it boosts priests, but as far as I know, and internet, correct me if I am wrong, the only priest that you can get that I know of is the War Shrine. Unless, there's a Underworlds Warband, because those sometimes have weird keywords on them for the hero parts of them. You know, it's normally like, bring this character and their entourage, and the character might be a priest. But, like, to have your whole, it says keywords are leaders, units in your army with the priest keyword have a leader battlefield role, and you add one to prayers. But, like, I guess if you're bringing a bunch of shrines, that's cool. I don't know. That seems like a weird thing. The coolest thing about it is you can make Warcry units battle line. So if you've ever wanted to spend so much money and automatically lose a game, here's your option. Just show up with ridiculous amounts of Warcry models, which, I mean, what a badass looking army that would be. Because the Warcry models are pretty much all incredible looking. The ones with the fans are the only ones I don't really like that much. They just don't look cool to me. But, like, they're terrible war stats. Like, I don't know if you guys have looked at the scrolls for these things. They're never really worth the points to bring. But this would be a super cool-looking army. To have just chariots, war shrines, and lots of cultists charging in after it. I think this is definitely more of a visual, or maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody out there really does have enough Warcry units to make a cool thing. I guess the other option you could do with it is just bring Warcry because they're cheap, and then you got cheap battle line, but you can already get 5 Chaos Warriors for 90 points, so I don't know that that's much of a huge difference for cheap battle line to get guys that will die even faster. But yeah, that's the summary of the Idolators, basically, is chariots, cultists, and priests. And that's it. You can mess up a terrain feature. And if you're targeting a priest, you get to add one to wound rolls, you know, for when your opponent busts out all those priests. Like, every army has, like, one, maybe. Don't they have, like, a 6-up save anyway? So, they're pretty much... I don't know. I think most of the time I just see them kill themselves before I get to them. So I never actually know what they do in combat. Yeah. So, yeah, Idolators, you can get a bunch of stuff for that. It's kind of cool. You get some prayers. The prayers basically are the same, not the same ones as the shrine, but kind of similar. So you're getting more shrine action. I like it. It's just having everything. Sweet shrine action. Having everything in your army depend on, like, dice roll makes me nervous. And everything that this gives you, for the most part, depends on like a 3-up roll or something. And that to me is like, you could just roll really poorly and then nothing happens for your whole army. It's like, it's why I don't really like to do magic heavy armies anymore, is because I feel like you could just lose because you roll poorly. Nagash can just flub 8 spells in a turn sometimes. So yeah, and then they get their own little battalion for Gresh, the mountain of a man. And he's a chariot. You get to bring 3 chariots. One of them kind of becomes like a little miniature hero. He gets a little more damage on his attacks and stuff. It's kind of cool. If you have 3 chariots or you bought that box, you probably want to do this. Otherwise, I don't know that you would really want to do this at all, honestly. Because the best way to run chariots is actually in another battalion that gives them impact charge. And so, not really sure why you would do this. I don't know. I mean, I guess the whole command ability, pick 1 friendly Slaves of Darkness unit, holy with an 18, add 1 to hit rolls. That could be pretty good. You obviously wouldn't pick the chariots. You would pick, like, I don't know, a bunch of Chaos Knights or something. Something that could actually do some damage. But I could see that being kind of useful, I guess. But yeah, that, in a rough 15-minute, 20-minute episode, if you only skipped to the rules part, and you're very disappointed right now, and we understand that, that's the Broken Realms Merathi. What did you guys think?
I thought the story was really cool.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I thought this book was a particularly great job.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and overall, this book moves the needle a lot more than Wrath of the Everchosen, which basically ended with, well, now the Ossiarch have a fort next to Archeon, and also Katakros dies, but of course he just gets a new body, because who thought that was going to stick? Like, they literally just introduced the model, and they're going to kill him in the next month. So, like, that kind of felt like, okay, well, that, you know, oh boy, the color on the map ticked a different color. This felt like, oh, they're just burning down the house. Like, and things are going forward. They're going to have to deal with that child at some point. They're going to have to deal with Merathi. And when I say they, I mean, like, everyone. Like, you can't just ignore this. I guess, like, Nagash could just fold his hands together and be like, well, kill each other. Go ahead. Fine with me. But, I mean, he doesn't want Slaanesh to get out and kill everyone. So, yeah. I don't know how many books are going to be in this series, if it's going to be, like, 2 or 3 or 8 or whatever. But I think, let's make, before we go, I want to do this. Let's make wild predictions on what will happen at the end of the Broken Realms series, and let's see if our magic powers hold true. You guys ready?
Yep.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Okay, I'll do mine first. All right.
Wild predictions. Fire.
So the wild prediction, all Grand Alliances are gone at the end of this, like, Merathi Broken Realms series. Merathi, technically now new Chaos God, and will be fighting with Slaanesh for control over all of the sexy scariness type of thing that's going to happen. Also, towards the absolute very end, Gordrak shows up with a freaking giant destruction army, and the next series that we go into is the overtaking of destruction across the mortal realms.
Yeah, I like that. I imagine the fight between Merathi and Slaanesh is just the scene from Zoolander with the catwalk walk-off. That's in the middle of a horrifying bloody war. And then, yeah, I agree. Gordrak shows up, kicks everyone's ass. He turns out he was just lost for a long time. And he's been ready for a crumpin'.
He took a wrong turn at Albuquerque. He took a while to get back.
He did. Shouldn't have listened to that rabbit. Damn it. All right. David, you want to go? What's your wild prediction?
All right. Wild prediction. Fleshy Records come back, and they get a redemption arc. They're good guys now. They somehow figured out how to not be blabbering bloodthirsty idiots. Got it. There's the first part.
Oh, okay.
Second part, Gordrak comes in with his big green wave, and he's going to take over the realms. Or not really take over, but he's going to be a threat almost as big as Chaos, because he's got a big green wave of orcs. Next prediction, Bug Army. Don't know where it's coming from. I'm still going to say it.
Maybe the Bug Army, like, rises up out of the realms because everybody's just destroying everything, and they kind of take that Pandarian logic where they're like, listen, we'll put you down, but we're going to protect the world.
I think if they did do it, it would be more of a kind of like the what's the word? The immune system of the realms. It's been done a few times in sci-fi where it's like they're the world trying to heal itself. They killed everything, but now the world's healing you. That kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, that's what I'd like to see. It wouldn't happen because it's not edgy.
That like the Final Fantasy weapons from Final Fantasy VII that are just like, we're showing up to put everything back in order. Yeah, yeah. Who knows? They could be. They could come from a very like, we're not joining anybody. We're just here to protect the world from you guys kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like an anti-faction.
Yeah. That's, I feel like we could make even more predictions in the next book. But for now, all I can say is orcs are coming. Flesh-eater courts are going to do something. And hopefully a bug army?
Sound like solid predictions to me.
Zach, big prediction.
Big prediction.
Go.
Here it is. Number one, I think Marathi ends up either not... She's not going to be a full-on goddess by the end of this. Somebody is going to take the shot at her. It's either going to be that the Solnesh baby... In order to kill it, she has to like give up part of her powers. They could play it as a redemption thing, but I have a feeling it'll be more like a surprise gotcha kind of thing with her. She doesn't seem like she's really heading for the redemption arc anytime soon. But I think she won't stay at the current power level she is. Either she will be exiled somewhere where, yeah, she's a powerful goddess, but honestly, everyone would take a shot at her, so she can't just walk around, you know. She has zero allies, not even... Chaos, and nothing wants to be her friend, basically. The Skaven are like, oh, you're unpopular. So I think that's probably where that will end. Wild predictions about it. I'm pretty sure what was Anvil Guard is just going to be a big crater of glass by the end of this. Like, if they've killed all the innocent people, then there's no reason Sigmar can't just start nuking that thing from orbit. And he has never shown that he's particularly, like, thoughtful about the amount of damage he's going to cause to get his job done. So I think, Josh, a little bit, you're right. We'll see everything just kind of fracture into its own different divisions. Characters will, you know, armies will still be able to ally in for faction and for games purposes, but lore-wise, you won't really see a lot of cities with, you know, tons of different races in them as much. Or maybe if you do, they'll be much more, like, controlled by the Stormcast. I think that the baby... will not survive. I think that whatever it is will probably be the thing at the end. I think I said this before, either everyone has to team up to fight it, or in fighting it, that kind of reduces everybody to 4% battery life, and they all just decide, okay, well, we gotta go home and lick our wounds. We can't keep this war going now that we have had to fight this god baby sort of thing. I think vampires rescued Vembrek. I really hope. I didn't want vampires because I think it's kind of just a boring concept. Like, we've seen it in multiple fantasy things. It's not super unique. But, you know, I'm trusting you, Games Workshop. Give me some cool vampires. If you tie them into this story and make them look good, I'll get them. I'll buy them. I'll get that dumb boat or whatever the model, the terrain piece will be. The terrain piece will be just the Eidoneth boat, but not on its side. they're just hey, we can reuse this model, right? Yeah, okay, fine, whatever. Put a skeleton on it. That's it. It's a ghost boat. Ooh. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think that wraps it up for this episode. Episode 18.
Episode 18, correct. Yeah. And thank you for listening, everybody at home. And, of course, check us out on social medias and stuff. All of that. AtlantaWarhammer.com is the site. Yeah, we love it. We love it when you guys read the stuff and talk to us. Hit us up on Discord. We got a link on the website now to the Atlanta Warhammer Discord channel. You can come in there and talk to us. A special thanks to Kai for, like, doing literally everything in there. I have to do zero upkeep for that, so thank you to him. And
drop your theories in there as well about what's coming.
Yeah, yeah. We got a whole channel for spoilers, so hit us. Let's talk about it. I'm in there all the time. If you talk about lore, I will be the person that responds. I am oppressive with wanting to talk about toy stories. So.
And finally, once again, thank you to our wonderful sponsors.
Yes. We love them. Thank you for letting us do this malarkey and talk about this awesome book. Go pick it up or buy the digital if you can. If you're anywhere a fan of any of these armies or characters, you will like this book. If nothing in this book appeals to you character-wise, you'll probably still like it, honestly. Like, it's a good enough story. So, yeah, 100%, go check it out. I love it.
Yep.
All right, guys. Uh-oh. Oh, we haven't done a sign-off with just the three of us and no guest in a long time. I know I go last because of my name.
I know David goes first.
Oh, no. For LandonWarhammer.com, this is David.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Zach saying, stay safe out there.
Yeah, it's like that, y'all. It's like that. It's like that.